inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them to help us to find.
Take a ride from the high desert and the great American Southwest, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio. This is Dark Matter with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Well, welcome to Extraterrestrial Radio, everybody. I am Art Bell, and it's great to be here tonight. Few adventures since yesterday. You know, though, first I would like to note, in a, of course, non-biblical way, I love my studio. Over the past several days, I've been getting, you know, everything adjusted in the right place, just exactly the way I want it. I've got this gorgeous atomic clock above me. I keep getting emails about that. One day I'll tell you where to get one like that. I found that clock, the clock you see in the studio picture, if you've seen it, in Radio France International. I went in there and was given a guided tour based on the network status ad back in the U.S. They let me in, badges and all, right, up to Radio France International, into the control room, and there was this clock. And I went, oh, God, I've got to have it. And, you know, I was beating around trying to figure out where it came from. They had producers rushing in trying to figure out where the clock came from. Well, they never did. So I came back to the U.S. and I began searching like crazy, and I finally found this clock. Now I've got one here, another one in the house. I've got one in Manila. So there you have it. I love these clocks. They're expensive, but man, if you're a time person, there's no other way to go. So yeah, I love my studio. Last night, after the program, I went home, sat down at the computer to browse a little bit, random browsing, took my glasses off to clean them with my shirt. My expensive titanium-framed glasses off, and as they were in my two hands, before I even applied the shirt, I was holding two halves of my glasses. I was chatting with a friend on the phone. I went, oh, my God, my glasses are broken. Left a note for my wife this morning. And she went off to the optometrist, as I had asked her to do. And he put in one lens from one set of glasses, and I had another pair of frames, and he put another lens in the other side that was completely wrong. So when I got them back, I put them on. I went, whoa, this isn't going to work. How am I going to read anything on the air? So anyway, it's all straightened out. Titanium, my foot. By the way, last night, Dr. Greer, his wife, Emily, you know, she's a sweetheart, and she told me, look, Dr. Greer is really tired. And he's been hopping from continent to continent. Remember, he talked about that secret meeting. Continent to continent, and he really has been. And I said, well, sit him down with a cup of coffee. And I think she's sat him down with a cup of coffee and a pot of coffee and maybe some Red Bull. I have no idea, but boy, that guy could go. All right, I've got some news for you. And by the way, when a guest goes like that, there's nothing to be done. Either you interrupt them and you get, you know, it sounds really rude, or you don't. And that's about all you do. And I don't interrupt. I've got good news for you. Oh, Canada. Guess what? Canada was unable, a whole country, mind you, was unable to call our 800 number, which, by the way, is 800. No, it isn't. It's 855. I guess it's still technically in the 800s, right? 855-REAL-UFO or 855-732-5836. Now Canada can call. They've unlocked the entire country of Canada. Thank you very much, Sirius XM. And thank you for other things, too, Sirius XM. Thank you for the sound quality. I've been getting a number of emails saying, my gosh, Art, the sound quality is really superb. And you know why? Because Sirius XM upped the sound quality for this show. That's right. They upped it. So now you know, but I want to thank them for that. I'm very sensitive to sound, as you know. You know how I feel about cell phones, right? Well, they've upped the whole sound quality. I'm talking about on the satellite. No minor matter. Big improvements in the wormhole. I could barely read it before, and now Keith has made it friendly. Has a blue background, white letters. I love it. So, you know, a lot of changes down here. I want to remind you that if you have a guest or that you think would be ideal for the program, you want to contact Paul Bowman. Paul loves getting emails. He's been telling me how much he loves getting emails. So if you have a guest you'd like to book for the show, go to artbell.com and find Paul Bowman's name. He's my producer, and he will take care of you. So there's one other thing. Here in the desert, normally we have really, really clear skies. You know, I mean, absurdly clear skies. But right now, and since this morning, we have had this haze. Oh, it's freaky. I mean, you can't see the mountains. You can't find out where the haze is coming from. Normally, if there's a fire, you know, we know about that, and then we get smoke or whatever from California or wherever. No fires. No reason for the haze. No statements from the Weather Bureau. I hope it's not Fukushima dust. So, this. One last sort of note. And that is, last night we were discussing, everybody wants to welcome me back to radio. And, you know, that's really cool. And I know you're all welcoming me back to radio. But instead of doing it, we're going to adopt from Rush. Rush used dittos. Well, somebody sent me an email, and I don't know how to give credit because I... Wait a minute, maybe I do. Yeah. How about this? Fred. How about Roswell's, folks? If you want to wish me welcome back to radio and all that stuff, just call up and say Roswell's, Art. And that'll do two things. One, it will take care of welcome back, and it's great to hear you again and all that sort of thing. And two, it'll keep Roswell on everybody's mind, as well it should be. Looking very quickly around the world, Beirut. Seems now they've mapped out the trajectory of the rockets that delivered the nerve agent sarin. And the trajectory looks right at the government. So 'twas not, apparently, the rebels gassing themselves or anything like it. Just what you thought, the government. They're the ones with the rockets. Passengers screamed stop, stop seconds before their bus crashed through a crossing barrier in Canada and then into a commuter train during the morning rush hour in Canada's capital on Wednesday. 6 dead, 34 injured. In Egypt, they're letting the ousted President Morsi talk to his family, and he's okay, I guess. In Mexico, they've got storm after storm after storm. And I believe there are as many as 80 dead now there in the hurricanes that have been spinning up off the coast of Mexico. So not good news. All right, in a moment, you're going to take quite a journey. We're going to be talking to Dr. Jonathan Reed. And boy, let me tell you, this guy has a story to tell that's going to curl your hair. So stand by. Let me talk to you for a moment. You trust me, right? I hope you trust me after all these years. It's something called the Sentinel Ally. And boy, is it an ally. Instead of a little tinny sound coming out of your cell phone, all you do is put your cell phone together by Bluetooth with the Sentinel Ally, and then you've got music that sounds like a concert hall. I'm not kidding, folks. It sounds that good. I've shown this to my friends, and they all want it, and then all their friends want it. It's one of those things you have to see to believe. Go to the zcrane.com website and see it. I want you to see it because it's hard to describe. It's kind of a half circle. Anyway, you can carry it anywhere. It's light, powerful, rechargeable, can accept Bluetooth, USB thumb drives, SD cards, and on and on and on, anything you want. Full stereo sound that makes it makes most stereos sound lousy. It's that good. You can take it anywhere, picnics, room to room, whatever you want. And it'll stay connected by Bluetooth. It is so cool. It is exactly $69.95, which I wouldn't have believed. $69.95, the Sentinel Ally. If you trust me about cool electronics, gadgets, trust me on this. Their number is 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. The C. Crane Company. And what we're going to do tonight is going right back to near the beginning. I'm Art Bell, and this is Dark Matter.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest.
This is Dark Matter, and I'm Art Bell. I'm going to sort of stop the phone numbers for now, because we're going to start the show. Internationally known contactee, experiencer, author, and lecturer, Dr. Jonathan Reed, whose stated articles have appeared both on international and domestic television, radio, and internet programs, such as Infinito, I hope it is, channel, the Discovery Channel, MX Costa Rica, Peru, Dreamland, Televisa, and the BBC, speaking in South and Latin America, Europe and Russia, And he's done some touring since the show, huh? Along with speaking many times with me. He put renowned radio talk show host Art Bell, me, as well as many others in countries all around the world. His story of personal alien contact is truly one of the most widely speculated, one of the most controversial, and most debated and compelling cases of our time. Having some of the best evidence ever collected relating to the reality of alien or extraterrestrial intelligent life forms interacting with humankind, all of us. His case has also been featured in very varied ET articles, television programs, literature, numerous publications around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Jonathan Reed, great to hear your voice, buddy. I am hearing it, right?
Happy Roswell, Mr. Bell.
There you are. Just say Roswell's.
Roswell.
That really does it, Roswell's. How the heck are you, Dr. Reed?
Boy, you got a few days?
I got a few hours.
I'm doing good now, and we'll get into some of those details later, but I'm doing well, and
I
certainly appreciate the opportunity to be back on with you.
Well, I know that your story is wildly controversial, but I also know, and the audience should know, I don't know if we'll bring them all on, but we've got like three more witnesses to what you're about to tell us, as incredible as it's going to sound to this audience. And we have to remember there's a lot of new folks, you know, Sirius XM people that have never heard the show and certainly never heard you and never heard your story. So we're going to go through the original story because it's so, I guess, out of this world, is a fair comment.
Well, it definitely warrants some time to consider all the steps that I went through, because I always say, look, if I hadn't have experienced this myself, I wouldn't have believed it either.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Of course, I'll just wait. I want to ask you how the years have been in reaction to the story, but not now. Let's do the story so we get it out there.
Okay.
All right, well, where did it begin? How did it begin?
This all happened back in August 15th, 1996. That was a Tuesday in near Seattle, Washington. I had gone for a day hike, mm-hmm. with my dog, Susie, who was a 7-year-old golden retriever.
Is that a fairly common thing for you to do, you know, to take a hike in
the
woods?
Sure. You know, to get out of the city, which is where I was living at the time, about, you know, a 45 to 50-minute drive to a beautiful, pristine area near Snoqualmie Pass, about 60 miles from east of Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we just got in my Jeep and my dog and I, as we did so many times, and drove to the mountains and parked where we normally parked. And
okay, at this point, you're alone, right?
Pardon?
You're alone, right?
Yeah.
Just you and your dog.
Me and my dog.
Okay.
In the afternoon. This was, at that time, it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And so
that's,
we just got out, and like I said, it's the Pacific Northwest, Washington State, is a beautiful evergreen area that has lots of trails and old logging trails, and that's essentially what this was. We had been there many times before, casually walking, occasionally seeing some wildlife. Early in the day when we started walking, we saw some deer, and this was common. You know, and you could take your dog off the leash and let her run, and she could just have all.
I know.
That
and the Northwest is gorgeous, Doctor. It's just a gorgeous place to live, and when the weather is nice and it's not raining, then, and particularly in August. I mean, you know, August 15th, middle of August must have
October.
Been really, really
October
nuts.
15th.
Oh, October.
Yeah.
October. Well, it was getting a little nippy by then.
Well, it can get crisp late in the afternoon, but it's still, we have some late summers. And this happened to be a very warm, late summer day. It was a little bit overcast, but for the most part, very, very nice fall day.
Okay.
So we just continued to walk down this old logging trail, you know, occasionally stopping to chase raccoons or look at some of the wildlife and just casually walking. And about an hour and a half into this walk, my dog, Susie, who took off running, you know, scampering through the woods, which was not uncommon. She would either chase squirrels or raccoons or something. But it was her freedom. It was her time to, you know, escape the leash from the city.
Sure.
And she was a great dog and followed direction well. She would come when I called her, and she would stay next to me when I would say stay. So she was pretty obedient. But this time she ran off, and she was barking, and I didn't think too much of it at first. And then I could hear her barking, the sound of her barking change. It sounded more like she was in a little bit of distress.
Right.
Or maybe had found some kind of animal that was backed up against a tree or something. And again, I didn't panic. I figured, okay, well, she'll, you know, get out of there in a moment. And Susie was a pretty big dog. She was about 80 pounds. So, big golden retriever. So, as I continued to walk, and I couldn't see her, but I could hear her, and it sounded like she was probably, 150 yards up the trail.
It's not too hard to hear when a dog is in distress because the bark kind of is a little whine comes with it.
Right. And at this point, it started to change almost to a yelp. So I knew something had happened. Something was different. You get to know your dog's, you know, voice. And I just knew something had changed. So at that point, I increased my speed and hurried along, and I still couldn't find her because the underbrush in this area is very dense, and there's a very heavy tree canopy, and I could not see her, but I could hear her, and I was getting closer and closer to where she was. So at that point, I figured, okay, she's probably either treed a raccoon or maybe even a small wildcat, because we have those in the area. And if that were the case,
she'd be in trouble.
She could be very, very seriously in trouble. So I set my backpack down, and I grabbed a branch that was laying on the side of the path that was the size of a long baseball bat, you know. And so I just picked it up, and I figured, okay, I'm going to go and probably untangle her from a skunk or a raccoon or something. And I ran forward, and still listening to her sound of her yelping now.
Sure.
And I couldn't see her, but I knew I was close, and I just ran over this little ridge and kind of jumped down through the underbrush. And all of a sudden, I saw her engaged with what looked to me at the time like a small size dimension figure, very dark, almost black, and it was the size of a child. It was mostly the size of a child, but what I was seeing...
God, my memory is awful. You know, I don't remember this from the first story. You're saying you saw a small
being...
Not fully. When you say dimensional, does that mean not solid?
No, it was solid. It was solid, but the darkness of the area, and at the moment I saw it, it was shaking. It was vibrating like a paint shaker. So you could not really accurately see the outline, the exact outline.
And now that I remember, shaking like a paint shaker, kind of
vibrating, so that the outer
very quickly.
Yeah, extremely quickly, so that all I could barely see was the outline. But my dog, it appeared to me at first that my dog had this thing by the arm. And I yelled, "Susie, let go." And then I realized, and this is what everyone needs to try to remember, from the second that I first stepped down to see this scene, it was approximately 10 seconds.
Right. And I, a lot of times in real life, when something this incredible is happening to you, time kind of slows down.
Oh, exactly. And even describing it doesn't give it justice to how fast it happened. And anyway, what I saw was my dog looking. It looked like my dog with her mouth was attached to the forearm of this thing. And they were both vibrating. And my dog was yelping, but then all of a sudden I saw clearly that it wasn't my dog that had a hold of this. It was the arm of the thing
that had
that actually extended, if you can imagine, part of your arm molding itself on the head of my dog.
Oh, Lord. You mean kind of disappearing into the head of your dog?
Grabbing the outside of the head of my dog, and then before my very eyes, I saw my dog being torn apart at the jaw. I mean, her body was ripped from her jaw down to her backbone. There was blood everywhere. At this moment, this thing stopped and looked at me. It stopped shaking just for a second and looked at me with these big, dark eyes, and then turned back to my dog, and my dog started to literally implode, literally disintegrate into what looked like a hole in her body. I mean, it literally started to just get smaller, like if you can imagine something vacuuming something up from the inside out. Her body started to fall into this dark space, and then all that was left was this white, gray ash that fell to the ground. And at this point, I jumped forward and hit this thing as hard as I could in the head with this bat, trying to kill it. And it screamed, and I screamed, too.
You had a bat?
Well, I had picked up this branch.
A branch.
You're right. Along the way, I had just.
I got you.
Up.
Okay. I, in other words, you were expecting probably to be fighting off some animal hurting your dog.
Right. Exactly. To detangle her from some kind of animal.
Got it.
But instead, there was this thing tearing my dog apart, and all I remember is the insane feeling of I have to stop this. I have to stop her from dying. I have to, and it was way too late for that.
Oh,
but
I
had
so
to
understand
stop.
That. I so understand that. How
it's
long
like
have you
your
ha-
child.
Had you, how long? Oh, of course, yes. How long had you had her?
Well, I had her about 6 years.
Oh,
she was about seven. She was an orphan, you know, showed up on my doorstep.
Not everybody listening is an animal person. I am. For me, it's cats. Doesn't matter, dogs. If you have animals, they're part of your family. That's all. They're like a member.
Absolutely.
Of your,
They are. Yeah. In fact, sometimes they're a better part of your family.
Even after all this time, you know, I can hear it in your voice. The way you're remembering this is so visual and so detailed that, I don't know, I can just hear it in your voice that this is what you saw. And it's an incredible thing to have seen.
It killed me. Art, when I saw this happen, I mean, it literally tore me apart, too.
Of course.
And, you know, but it even became more insane to me, because the second I hit this thing, trying to kill it, and I wanted to kill it, it screamed, I screamed, I think in triumph of trying to stop what I was witnessing, but I almost missed it. I mean, I'm not an athlete. I'm 190 pounds, and you know, but I almost didn't hit it. But as I struck it, its head, It started to fall down. The branch had breached its skull. It had broken its skull.
So
this
thing was definitely solid, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
Were able to, and so you smashed it, huh?
Oh, well, and you've seen the pictures, and there's pictures now on
Okay, let's stop here. Let's stop here and send people to artbell.com. That's the actual website, artbell.com. And we've got, you want to describe what's up there, where we should look, and what we should be looking at for this part of the story anyway?
Well, I don't have a computer on in front of me, but I'll tell you what I sent you.
Sure.
I sent you three different pictures of this creature. We'll call him a creature at the moment. And this was after I had knocked it down and laid it on a thermal blanket that I had in my pack. But you can see its head. You can see its neck. It's very old-looking. It has veins and eyelids and a mouth and no ears. It has ear canals. If you expand the one side view, you can actually see the ear canals.
Everybody better go take a look, artbell.com, and he actually has pictures of the creature. I would say the second one is my favorite, or is it the first? There's three. Oh no, the third one is my favorite.
Now let me just say something here because it's important. These pictures were taken prior to digital photography.
Mm-hmm.
In 1996, we were still using film. This is 35-millimeter slide film and negative film.
By the way, Doctor, hold on. I want to bring something up.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's 35-millimeter, and the pictures that you sent tonight, particularly of the obelisk, we haven't even come to that yet, but back when you took that photograph, they were better quality than they are now. The obelisk was so clear that people got upset about it. And that was 35-millimeter photography, right?
Yes, 35-millimeter, yeah. And a good camera, good Nikon camera.
What happened to the better quality photographs that you originally supplied to us?
Well, when I was told today that I needed to send some additional things, I contacted some of my team, and they sent you what I asked them. As far as original, they're all original. Some are just maybe a little more clear than others.
Yeah, I remember the obelisk picture, which was really, really clear.
Yeah, well, and
it was so clear that people complained about it.
I've got, you know, let me just continue the story and say I took approximately four rolls of film. I took everything I had left because, you know, I was laying on the ground. The second I hit this thing, I got sick. I got instantly, violently sick, a crippling sickness that dropped me to the ground, to my knees.
Can you describe nausea, or what do you mean by sick?
So sick, no control of my bowels or my bladder, or throwing up to the point of bleeding. Gasping for breath and not having any muscle control in my body at all.
At this point, the creature is itself on the ground next to you?
Laying, as far as I was concerned, dead on the ground within about 2.5 to 3 feet from me. And I was now laying face to face with it.
Oh, and God, and you were as sick as a dog. How long did that last?
Probably about 2.5 hours. I couldn't get up. I would try to get up. I would fall back down. I would try to slow down my breathing, and I would be gasping for breath. I felt like something had instantly hit me, had overcome me, had taken over my whole body at the second that the impact of the branch hit his skull. And again, this didn't make any sense to me. It didn't make any logical sense. Prior to this, I was feeling just fine. It was just a normal day. But the second...
So something transmitted to you through that...
Yes. And the closest thing that I can relate it to, that other people have have since identified to me is the same feeling that people have said when they had had some kind of radiation poisoning.
Wow.
So this was, and when I say a crippling sickness, I mean unbelievably crippling, to the point where I actually thought I was going to die within the first 5 or 10 minutes.
I believe that. I mean, if you were down for hours, a couple hours.
Well, I just couldn't get up.
I'm with you. You would think you're dying. Sure, that's a common.
I was crawling. The ground, the air felt different.
Uh-huh.
It felt spongy and thick and hot. Nothing felt normal. Everything felt out of place.
Yes.
None of the things that I recognized as a normal life were now in place. And all I could think was, I've got to survive this. I've got to get away. And I started to crawl away from the body just to get away to maybe mentally focus on something else.
Quick question. Do you think that the effect that stayed with you for like a couple of hours that you just described to us was from being in continued proximity to that body? I mean, I would do the same thing, try and crawl away from it, but I'm just wondering, do you think that continuing effect was because the body was there or just from what happened when you cracked that thing in the skull?
I think it was a combination of things, of events. As I tried to crawl away, using what little logic I could find that made any sense, I started to hear a sound in the forest. And it was like a low, ebbing, harmonic tone. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know where it was coming from. But in my mind, I thought, well, maybe it's another hiker. Maybe somebody's got a radio or a boombox or something, and I'm hearing the sound. And I thought, yes, I need help. I hope, you know, that this is what it is. And so I would kind of crawl a little farther, and I'd kind of prop myself up next to a tree, and then I'd get sick again, and I'd throw up, and I'd, you know, just lose all control of my body.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see anything, but I still could hear this sound. I could almost feel this sound. And it was almost like it was scratching in my ears, almost a tactile feeling. And I went a little farther, and I'd fall down. And then I'd prop myself up against a tree, and I'd get sick again. And finally, I got almost angry, and I got up, and I kind of ran through the brush and actually fell down in this little ravine. And then I realized I was next to something that was unbelievable. It was a big black-shaped, diamond-shaped object that I estimated to be approximately 9.5 feet long by about 2 to 3 feet high and about 3 to 4 feet wide. And it was
right,
black.
We've got a photograph. Yeah, we've got a picture, folks, of this on the website. Big picture.
And in discussing this, I call it the obelisk because it reminded me of the top of the Washington Monument.
And you said you felt a sound. You felt a sound as well as heard a sound.
I felt this sound, this ebbing, low, harmonic sound. So low that, I mean, it was like I could almost feel it in my backbone. Very, very solid tone. And kind of modulating a little bit up and down, just a little bit. Anyway, I got up, and I crawled up underneath this black thing, and I realized this thing isn't touching the ground. It's anchored to the air. It's not floating. It's not moving.
Now, there's a term, anchored to the air.
It was anchored to the air.
Or defying gravity, right?
And I pulled myself up, got up, stood on my feet, and then lost my balance, and I fell against it. And as I fell against it, the sound changed just a little bit. It became more pleasant sounding for a moment.
Pleasant sounding.
And this thing was cold, like dry ice. I mean, when I pulled my hand away because of the cold, it actually tore the skin off the palm of one of my hands. It was like granite, like polished marble.
Nothing pleasant about that.
There was no windows. There was no seams. There was no landing gear. There was no antenna. There was just this black thing.
And it was hovering how far above ground?
Approximately 2.5 feet above the ground.
All right.
When I finally got enough...
No, doctor, hold it right there. Hold it right there. we're going to take a break. My guest is Dr. Jonathan Reed. And I guess I don't have to tell you what you're hearing. This is Contact.
XM, baby, and we're very serious. To call Art Bell, please manipulate your communication device and call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
I can only imagine, with what I've heard so far, that if it happened to me, I'd be dead. You know, my age, it'd be heart gone. And just with what has been described so far, I'd be gone. I'm sure I would. Maybe not, but I just don't think I'd make it through that. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
You don't have a weak heart. I take it.
Actually, I've had 2 heart attacks in the last 10 years.
You do have a weak heart. But this was 96.
Right. I didn't know any better.
You're lucky it didn't go then.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, here you are you're trying to crawl away from this thing. You crashed into it. It's making you sick. Really sick.
Well, I wasn't sure what was making me sick, except I knew something in the whole area was causing me to feel sick and me to feel out of anything that I felt natural with. Right. My world was gone. This was a totally unusual, unparalleled feeling of being out of your own element. I thought I was either completely going insane or that I was going to die from this sickness just from the fact that my body was becoming so dehydrated. And I just couldn't control it. And after I fell against this thing for a brief second, just for a minuscule second, I almost felt like I was inside of it and then got thrown out.
And so you felt it?
It felt like it was an intelligent machine.
Okay.
Like it almost was trying to figure out if I was maybe the little guy that I knocked down.
Oh.
Maybe because I was the only two-legged breathing thing crawling around. Maybe it was looking for its partner.
Okay, maybe I'm going to ask you for the impossible, but how do you, I mean, I understand that you felt it. It was, in effect, in you, and you felt a kind of a machine, but is there any way to put that really into words? What does a machine feel like?
Well, being that it was making this sound, being that it was creating this sound,
this big humming sound.
And when I touched it, that humming changed.
Right.
That gave me the indication that, you know, this was somehow generating this sound. And it was so obscure to see this thing in the middle of the woods, so out of place, but yet hanging 2 feet above the ground, not hovering. And I need to really reference that. It was not moving a fraction of an inch.
Right.
But yet it was there. It was anchored above the ground. I mean,
that's what you said, anchored, which is an interesting way to put it. I would have said floating, but you're saying anchored.
So yeah, stationary, 100% stationary.
When you crashed into it, you didn't budge it?
Not a fraction.
Okay.
It made almost no sound as far as me trying to put my hands on it or leaning against it. It almost felt like it was kind of absorbing the sound. Now, this could have been all an illusion because of my sickness as far as the overall sound.
Mm-hmm.
But I carried on to say to myself, well, I guess it's here. I guess this is in front of me because it's tangible. It ripped the skin off of my hand. I know that didn't just happen with a tree branch, and I can't move this thing, and it's making a sound, and for a brief second, I felt almost like it was trying to identify something,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe I wasn't it, but this is speculation after years and years of thinking about this. I mean, at the time, I had no idea. I was just going completely out of my mind, trying to find some logic to hold on to, because nothing made any sense. And I knew that my body alone was quickly becoming in severe state of shock.
Right.
And I was conscious of that. I was conscious of the fact that I couldn't breathe. I was gasping for air. And when you do this for a long period of time, you almost lose consciousness and then come back because
right.
of the, you know, the whole air process of your body. So I was readily aware that my body was going into shock. So my mind was survival. My mind at that moment was survive this.
Mm-hmm.
So at that moment I said, okay, I got to get some water. I have to get some water in me because I had emptied all of the water in my body that I had between throwing up and losing control of all of my functions.
So you were in shock. You were severely dehydrated.
And I was aware I needed to get some water. And I had some water in my pack. I always take things with me when I go on a day hike. When you've done it for years and years, you realize there's certain things you take with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had some dog treats. I had a thermal blanket. I had a first aid kit. Some of the just bare essentials. I had water, a water canteen. I had a couple of cans of soda. And I knew I had water in my pack. And to me, to focus on this at that point gave me great solace, gave me great, restored some idea that I was thinking a little bit clearly. So I focused on that, and I actually crawled back up, which was probably 200 feet, to where my pack was, where I had left the pack.
Right.
And I grabbed it, and I sat there, and I drank the water, and I drank some of the soda. And I realized I've got my camera with me in the pack.
Now, that's some pretty clear thinking after you've described the condition you were in.
Well, I had to take the camera out to get to the water.
Right.
It wasn't clear thinking. It was just the process of illumination. And at that moment, Art, in my head was, none of this is real. I was actually thinking to myself, this has to be all an illusion. I have, you know, somehow, you know, hurt myself or fell down or had some kind of massive stroke, and I am now living in this illusion. That's what my mind was telling me, because none of it felt real. So when I saw my camera, I thought, well, I'm going to take a picture of this, and none of it will come out. And then it'll prove to me that this nightmare is not going on. That was my thinking.
I completely
understand. Yeah. I've got this in my hand. I know how to use a camera. You know, I was a pretty good amateur photographer. Photography was kind of my hobby.
Sure.
So I thought, well, I'll just prove to myself that this isn't here. So I grabbed my cameras. I walked back over to where this was. I took some pictures of the body crawling around on my hands and knees. I crawled back over to where this black floating shape was. I tried to clear some of the brush underneath it away.
Right.
So that it was even clearer that it wasn't touching the ground. And as I did that, as I tried to clear some of the ferns away underneath it, there was a feeling as I moved this stick, this branch, to pull away the ferns, like there was a density of the air underneath this thing that was different than the air around it. Almost like if you put a branch or a board in water.
Yes.
When it enters the water, it has a resistance that's different than the air. And this was the same thing, except it was just the air underneath this object that was more dense. And again, I couldn't explain it. I didn't even want to rationalize. All I'm doing is seeing it in front of me. And I'm focusing on, okay, take the picture. Don't think of anything else. Just work your camera. You know how to work the camera. It was pretty much automatic anyway. And I concentrated on that. I totally focused on, almost obsessively, on take the pictures, Jonathan.
Sure.
And because it gave me, again, some kind of promise of logic, because I knew how to take the picture, I knew how to take the film out of the camera and reload it, and I just kept saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to take this, I'm doing this now, I'm taking the picture. And I did. And I also had a video camera with me. And I videotaped this whole area. Under the
Boy,
state and condition,
you had
I
recovered. You had really recovered a lot to be doing that.
Actually, not Art. If you hear the videotape, I am so hyperventilating and so stopping and so throwing up during the videotape that it's clear that I was not recovered. Art, I am just a man, and I was running on pure adrenaline. And only holding on to that logic that kept me moving forward. Because I didn't want to think about what had happened. What had happened with my dog? What had happened with this creature? What had happened to me? I didn't want to think about it. I wanted to just be healthy. I wanted to just come out of this nightmare at the moment. So that was the only logic going on. Now, Art, you've had some of those photographs from years ago.
Oh,
you
yes.
even had the negatives.
Oh, yes. Listen, folks, these photographs are so clear. I wish the ones that we had up on the website for you right now were as clear as the original photographs. They were so clear that people raised hell about it. Usually it's it's a fuzzy photograph of a UFO. This was so clear that people complained. And Dr. Reed is right. I have the negatives to these photographs. Story over.
And we also had other people, you know, independently look at the negatives and look at the videotape. And it is exactly what it is. It's just normal negatives, normal positive prints.
Was there any reaction to either by the object or the creature to the photographs being taken?
Well, as far as I was concerned, the creature was dead. Skull was broke open. There was a 2-inch hole in the back of his skull. It had cracked the intracranial sac. The blood was everywhere from it, and
Was it red blood like ours?
Yes, exactly like ours.
Is it your impression that the obelisk was a vehicle, or was it a companion, or what was it?
Well, I've never felt it was a craft. Many people have said it was a craft.
Mm-hmm.
I have felt that it was something else, but it was, in my mind, it was alive. It was readily sensing the area and or causing my body to be in such distress. Maybe it was a defense mechanism. I don't know.
Mm.
But it could have been a portal to another dimension. It could have been a doorway or a toolbox.
Okay. From its size, you wouldn't think it would be the craft, but as you point out, it could be still a means of travel from wherever to here.
Yes, yes. And since then, I've talked to lots of people all over the world who have also seen the same shape, the same dimension, the same object. Many, many, many different places and over the last 100 years.
Now, that's really interesting. In other words, after you originally told this story on my program, you did a lot of, what, touring?
Well, once you allowed me to tell my story, and you were the exclusive first point of me going public, a lot of people inquired, a lot of people wanted to listen, to understand what I'd gone through, and I felt at the time that I guess this is what I need to do, is I need to tell people, I need to share this with people.
Well, I don't blame them. Anybody, for example, even right now, and it's almost as though you're remembering more than you did then, anybody listening right now is going to be aware that this is a serious story of contact. So, yes, I'm not surprised that...
It's serious, but what I want to add in is I've since learned, Art, that there's thousands of people who have similar stories. They just...
I know, but they don't have very similar evidence.
That's right. That's right. They either were smart enough not to bring it forward, or they just didn't have it. Look, I was not experienced into this. I was never a believer or even a prescribed interest into this field. I didn't even like science fiction. I was a serious scientist, a doctor that works with logic. So this was totally out of my element. Not even of my interest at the time. So my whole paradigm began to collapse because I could not find any logic.
You realize, and I'm sure you've met with this, that these kinds of stories, Doctor, scare people. And when people get scared, they get defensive and they start screaming hoax and all the rest of it because it scares them. It really scares them, and I don't blame them.
I said at the beginning, Art, if this hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't believe it either, except for the fact that there's a lot of physical evidence.
And if there wasn't
physical evidence, including photographs, including video, and including some other things, then I definitely can see how people would be, you know, hard to see it as being anything other than just a story.
Sure. All right. Well, let's pick up, because there's so much more to it. Now, you've taken the photographs.
Taken the photographs. I put everything.
Video.
Kind of crawled back to where I had dragged the pack and drank the water. I drank more. I tried to rest. I tried to not hyperventilate so much so that my body could kind of stabilize. But still, it was in a state of flux. It was not at all calming down.
Right.
But I felt more, shall we say, more stable. Maybe just because I was doing something and accomplishing something with the photograph.
Well, yeah, something familiar that will really help you when you're in shock.
And so when I was putting all this, you know, taking the cameras out of my bag and grabbing the water, you know, I pulled everything out of the pack, out of my day pack, and I just kind of, you know, threw it on the ground as I was grabbing for the water. Well, one of the things that I had was a thermal blanket, which is, for people who don't know, it's a Mylar type material, plastic that you can wrap yourself up in if you find yourself in the snow or if you find yourself in distress in the woods, to keep your body temperature from, you know, reducing.
It really works.
Oh, they really work, and they're very, very lightweight. I mean, it's nothing more than a very thick plastic wrap, actually. But it's strong. It's got some strength to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had pulled this out, and it was all in a little package, you know, all folded up in a little package. And it's kind of a silvery gold color. And I'm sitting there with my cameras and putting kind of stuff back in the pack. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Now what am I going to do?
Right.
It's an hour and a half back to my Jeep from walking comfortably when I arrived. Now I'm crawling on the ground. What am I going to do? So I thought, well, I gotta take this body, and in my mind I'm thinking, I got to take this body and put it somewhere where the animals won't get to it.
You know, I think I would have been afraid to touch the...
Well, I was. I was afraid to touch it. I was in fear of everything. But my mind logically said, cover it up. Cover it up so I don't even have to look at it at this moment.
That I get.
So I tore open this thermal blanket from its package. I opened it up, and I spread it out over the top of this body and just left it like that for quite a while, just not looking at it anymore. Just kind of letting my mind go away from it. And that felt better. It felt better not to look at it. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I should take some rocks and place around the edge of the blanket so that, you know, animals don't get at it. Well, there weren't any rocks. And it's high enough in the woods and the mountains where there just wasn't any exposed rock, loose rocks.
Right.
And I thought about, well, maybe I can find some more branches and pile it next to the edge of this little rise, this hill, and just kind of cover it up. So, you know, later maybe I can come back and bring somebody back and try to figure out what this is. Because I didn't know what I had killed.
I understand. You never gave any thought, did you, to trying to drag this thing back to your car?
Well, yes, at that point, Art, I decided I would cover this thing up, and I tucked this thermal blanket under the body without touching it. I didn't want to touch it at all. And I just kind of wrapped it up like a burrito.
Quick question. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be barging in, but a sense of, maybe you didn't get it from dragging, but do you have any sense of how heavy this thing was?
Well, when I pushed the thermal blanket underneath the edge of it, I moved the body. I could feel my hands and my arms moving the body. And I felt surprised that it was so light in weight, that it was so extremely light. This was the size of a 12-year-old child.
Oh, that's pretty big.
Yes, it was about 53 to 56 inches in total height. But it weighed probably 50 pounds. So it just didn't make any sense. Of course, nothing made any sense. So why should that be anything different? And at that point...
Didn't you tell me you were an hour and a half from your car?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So I wrapped it up. I folded the ends around it. I took the straps of my pack and put around it to lift it up like a sling. And I was going to drag that over to the edge of this hill and put branches on it if I could find them. Well, when I picked it up, I realized, you know, this is amazingly light. It's just incredible. So I took it over to the edge of this hill as best I could, stopping to throw up. And I really couldn't find any branches right there. So I decided, well, I'm going to walk up, put my pack in one hand and this thing in the other.
Mm-hmm.
It created a balance. And I'm going to find a place to put this. And then I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go to my Jeep, because at that time it was getting later in the day. At that point it was, you know, past probably 3:30. And late in October, it starts to get dark.
Right.
And I knew I needed to get out of there.
All right. So this was now maybe 2.5 hours or so into the incident, right?
Right.
All right. Doctor, hold it right there. We've got to take a break. And this is some story, and you're far from done, folks. Earlier, when I advertise Sea Crane products, I say things like, you know, trust me on this. Well, trust me on this one. It's the FM transmitter. And this so goes with Sirius XM. If you have a Sirius XM receiver and you buy one of these FM transmitters and you hook your Sirius up to it, then you can set the FM transmitter to transmit anywhere in the FM band. And everything that's coming over Sirius XM gets retransmitted in the FM band. Now, that means you can go to any radio in your house and listen away. Is that smart or what? Now, of course, Sirius XM is not the only thing you can attach it to. You can attach it to your iPhone and play music, iPad, iPod, smartphone, computer, internet radio. Doesn't matter. It'll transmit all of it to the FM radios throughout your house. They say up to 45 feet line of sight. However, we always like to remind you not to attach a 30-inch wire to it for improved distance. We like to remind you not to go to the internet and look up ways you can fiddle with it. It's powered by an AC adapter, runs on two AA batteries if you want it to. I prefer the AC adapter. Covers the whole FM band. Now, it's $59.95. That's what it says right here, $59.95. Call the Sea Crane right now, the Sea Crane Company, at 1-800-522-8863. The number again, 1-800-522-8863. And don't forget, you can go to seacrane.com and you can get a catalog. All right, well, Dr. Reed is going to be back in a moment, and I don't know about you, but with this story, I need these breaks. You're listening to Dark Matter, exclusively on Sirius XM.
Come
Space, the new frontier for Art Bell's dark matter. To call the show, please dial 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Well, all right, we're going to pick the story right back up again because there is so much more to it. My guest is Dr. Jonathan Reed. And Dr. Reed, just as we continue the story, somebody's asking, you know, I get these messages, what kind of doctor you are?
Developmental psychiatrics, child development. I was a research counselor for kids.
Excellent. Thank you. Proceed. So here we are, and now you're dragging this thing.
Well, literally, I was carrying it, because if 50, I say
that's
dragging...
50 pounds. That's 50 pounds, doctor.
People will say the thermal blanket would have been torn to shreds, and they're right.
I see you've been interrogated on the story before.
Art, I have lived
a million
with this
times.
For
yeah.
17 years.
I'm sure.
And I appreciate everyone's questions, let me just say that. And I have no problem in people either not believing it or believing it, because it is hard to believe unless you experienced it.
Well, you know what? Having pictures and witnesses doesn't hurt. All right, so you carried this thing, 50 pounds. That's a lot of weight to carry, you know, for an hour. Or now
well, I thought so too, and I would carry it. I would stop. I would drink some water. I would throw up, and I would carry it again. And what's amazing is all of a sudden, I ended up back looking at my Jeep and thinking, "How did I get here?
Pure
how
adrenaline.
How did I get here in such a little time? What felt like 10 or 15 minutes?" And it didn't make any sense. But, of course, nothing made any sense at that time. Nothing, there was no reality except what I was looking at, what was in my hand, you know, was my key for my Jeep, and that looked comfortable. That looked like home to me. And all I remember is opening the back of the Jeep, putting my pack in this package that was fairly small, wrapped up in this thermal blanket, putting it in the back of my Jeep. And I remember sitting in the driver's seat, closing the door, and just sitting there for some time, not starting the car, not just kind of zoning out, thinking, you know, just thinking nothing. And then I looked over and I realized Susie wasn't sitting in the seat next to me like she always was. And I knew something had happened, something.
Was there any, may I ask a question? Was there any, at any point when you touched, even through the thermal blanket, I guess you wouldn't know. I'm just curious whether there was any warmth to the body of this creature, or stone cold, or, you know, anything?
It was, for all of my logic, it was dead. It was not breathing. It was
right.
Not moving. Its skull was broke open. There was blood and brain material coming out of that hole.
Gotcha. As Rush would say, room temperature then.
Any time that I moved it or touched it, it never moved.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just dead weight to me at that point. And, you know, I want to say again, I didn't have any great plan. This all came out of nothing more than a survival feeling of getting back to some kind of reality, to where I could address being so sick and I could calm down and trying to find some way to put this in perspective.
All right. Somebody named Heather is asking, was there any scar on your hand from having touched that ship or that
sure.
obelisk?
Sure. The inside
there was.
The inside of the palm of my hand, the skin was torn off. So, but, you know, over 17 years, that's kind of healed.
Healed, right.
You know.
Did you document the injury?
I don't think I did at that time. I don't think that was my focus. I had bigger things to worry about.
Oh, I can clearly see that, yes.
And in the next, you know, in the next few days, it got even worse. So I drove home. I started to drive home from that space, that place in the forest where I parked my car. And I would drive for, you know, a few miles, and then I'd stop, and I'd have to open the door and throw up. And then I'd drive a little farther, and then I thought, okay, there's a ranger station up here. I'm going to go there. I'm going to get help there. These guys will help me, you know, forest
sure.
rangers.
Yeah, of course.
So I got off, you know, where it said forest ranger station. I drove a couple of, I don't know, about a mile and a half to where it was. I got out, and there was nobody there. The place was locked up tighter than a drum. I don't know if they were out to dinner or what, but there was no one there.
Okay.
So I got back in my Jeep, and I said, I, you know, got to go where I got to go, and I'm going home, you know. And I just drove home in kind of a numb state. And all I remember was the headlights on the road because it was starting to get dark. And I remember pulling in the carport at my house,
right,
and thinking, I'm here, I'm home, and maybe none of this happened. Maybe it's just some kind of sick illusion that I have gone through because of the trauma of my dog dying. Maybe my dog got killed by an animal, and I just can't fathom this idea. I don't know.
That's because the brain doesn't want to digest this kind of information as having really happened.
It doesn't know how to put this in perspective.
Was anybody home at the time?
No. I lived alone, and I sat in the carport for a while, and I just thought about it, and I looked in the rearview mirror, and I could see the top of the thermal blanket, and I thought, okay, I got to do something. I got to get out. I got to get away from this. I started thinking about burying it. I started thinking about leaving it somewhere else on somebody else's doorstep. I mean, my mind was whirling.
And I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. I'm just thinking if you had done that, then you might have been really responsible for a heart attack.
Well, exactly. I mean, I probably would have taken it, you know, to the university that I worked at or something like that. But I was so sick, I just didn't want to do anything. So what I did was simply take it out of my Jeep because I didn't want somebody to steal it. I didn't want somebody to find it and have it kill them by shock. I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking, but I thought I got to get it out of my Jeep. And my Jeep is right next to my garage, which is an exterior building, not connected to my house, a two-car garage. And I thought, well, I'll just put it in there. So I opened the inside door, small, you know, door to my garage.
Sure.
And walked in, turned the light on, and right in front of me against the far wall was my freezer, a big coffin-like freezer.
Coffin-like.
And I thought, this will hide it. This will preserve it. This is dead meat. It's going to go bad, and at least I don't have to look at it. And so I put it in the freezer. I literally just put it, opened the top of the freezer, and lowered it down and thought, it's out of sight, out of mind, and now I'm going to go in the house and stand in the shower.
And this was over your meats and frozen?
No, there wasn't much in that freezer. There was a separate rack that I just took out that had some frozen things, you know. And I just, I didn't care. I didn't care. I wanted it out of my sight.
Well, actually, a freezer is a logical place to put a body that you want to preserve anyway.
Well, I don't know that I wanted to preserve it as much as I just wanted to get it out of my hands and out of sight and mind for the moment. That was the logic. Again, I was not thinking very clearly. I was thinking step by step just to get to the next point where I could calm down and not be throwing up and filling my pants. So I closed the garage door. I walked in the house and I did exactly what I said. I stood in the shower with all my clothes on for I don't know how long, just letting the water run all over me and trying to clean
up. Didn't even take your clothes off.
No.
Okay.
No, I was a mess, Art.
I bet you were. And by the way, everybody, listen, if you want to see, by now I know you do, the Associated Photography, even though it's not the original best, it's up on the website, artbell.com. Pictures of the creature, pictures of the obelisk we've talked about, pictures of all of this. So go take a look. And I know people are doing this in incredible amounts because it's beginning to crash my ability to read questions.
Well, even our website has crashed twice since we've been on the air. So.
Yeah, I'm sure Keith is doing backflips over there. But that
kudos to Keith.
Well, he's like I am, you know, sort of cranking up, getting going. So I understand. He's probably added another server or two by now. All right, so the thing's in the freezer. You're in the shower.
And I get out, I try to calm down, I try to drink water, I try to sit down, I can't. I'm laying down, I'm thinking, I'm feeling a little better, maybe 10% better. So I'm not panicking, trying to think, well, I've got to go to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm now thinking, this had to be trauma. This had to be trauma-induced by the fact that my dog was killed in front of me by an animal. And that's what my mind wanted to believe. My mind started to create this scenario while I was in the house, while I was calming down, that this was the only logical answer, that this must have been an animal and that killed my dog. And I just, for some reason, spaced out. I just
but
lost.
Somewhere in your mind, soul. Though, you knew, number one, there's something I put in the freezer, and number two, I took a whole lot of photographs.
Well,
so.
at that point, Art, I was thinking, what's got to be in the freezer is my dog, Susie.
Oh.
That's what I had to have wrapped up. That's what I had to have brought home.
I truly understand.
And I felt comfortable thinking mm-hmm. that.
Sure.
Because it made more sense. It was more realistic to me that that is very logical, that that could have happened. So I convinced myself that that's basically what it was. And I even got dressed and went out to my garage and said, absolutely, this has got to be Susie. And I opened the freezer and I lifted it out and set it on the garage floor. And it wasn't Susie.
Somebody's asking, was there a smell?
Yes, there was. It had a terrible pungent odor that I have decided that it's similar to rotting fruit. The odor of rotting fruit.
Right.
And it wasn't pleasant and it was always there. And it didn't even seem to diminish much, even after it had been in the freezer for a couple of days. But to continue, I saw that it wasn't my dog. I put it back in the freezer. I went in the house. And I'm now thinking, I got to call some people. I got to get some help for me with this. I'm, you know, trying to keep from going into shock again. So I started calling my friends. And, you know, you just pick up the phone and you start dialing those who are most familiar that you call.
That's what I would do, too. If you really think about it, would you call the police right away? Well, no, maybe not, because you just thought you killed something.
I was even a little concerned about calling the police because I had killed something. And I didn't know if there was some kind of legality to this that maybe I should pursue through a lawyer first. My mind was reeling, Art.
With you all the way.
And at that point, comfort seemed to contact my friends who knew me, who I knew. And so I just did that. I called my girlfriend. She wasn't home. I left a message. Call me, please, immediately. I called other friends that I worked with. They weren't available. I called my very best friend, Gary, and I left him a message, and he called me back within just a few minutes. And I literally said, "Help me. I'm sick. My dog has been killed. Susie's dead, and I'm home, and I need some help." And he said, "I'll be there." And he immediately came. And I told him the story, and of course he didn't believe me. But he was my good friend for many, many years, and he listened.
So he
and
came.
He knew I was sick. He came and sat in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, it's true. It is true. It's." And he said, "Well, Jonathan, you know, we all go through difficult times, and I'm sure you're
sure
feeling...
you probably got a bad bump on the head, buddy."
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And what can I do for you? And I got angry. And I said, "Come with me. And I'm going to take you and show you." And he's reluctant. And he's saying, "Jonathan, you know, you just need to rest. You just need to calm down."
Mm.
And I took him to the garage. And I opened the freezer. And I laid it on the floor. And I showed him. And I said, "Tell me that you don't see this. Tell me this isn't what you see."
And Gary's reaction?
Well, his jaw dropped open, and he was speechless, and for some time. And I don't know that he said a few expletives that even for serious radio shouldn't be said.
That's quite right. We get
and
the idea.
At that point, he kind of backed up against the wall, and I said, "Well, I got to put this back in the freezer." And he just stood there. He didn't say anything. And I walked by him, and he was just like in a trance. And I said,
"Shocking.
I got to go in the house. I got to sit down."
Shocking.
And he followed me in, and he sat down and just sat in my living room, almost speechless. And I said, "It's true. This happened." And he just looked at me, and he said, "It's incredible." And I said, "I have videotape. You want to see it?" And he just, again, stared at me like I was insane. And I took the videotape that I actually recorded in the forest, and I played it on my television. And it was there. It was all there. The black floating object, the body, ash from my dog.
Did he regain enough of his sensibilities after watching all of this to give you advice to...
Yes, after some time, after drinking about a half a bottle of scotch.
I get.
You know, he came to the point where he says, "Well, I know what this is." And I said,
"Was that
no.
the both of you? Was that the both of you consuming the scotch?" Or...
No, I was pretty sick, and I didn't want to go there. I was just drinking as much water as I could get in me. But he finally said, he says, "Jonathan, I know what this is."
Oh.
And I kept saying, "No, I don't know. I don't know what this is. I don't know." And he said, "It is. It's got to be some kind of extraterrestrial or right. some kind of biological creature that somebody created."
Well, I'm just looking at the photographs, and I'd say definitely E.T.
Well, I didn't want to go there. Because that wasn't comfortable for me. That wasn't part of my world, and it didn't make sense to me. I was not a believer. I was not into that type of thing. But he was sure. He was adamant. He was almost excited. And I said to him finally, "I don't want to have anything to do with this. I want to get better. I want to get well." And he said, "Well, we need to tell some people." And I said, "No, we don't. We need to be careful, you know, because I don't want people tearing my house apart. I don't want, you know."
And that's what would have happened.
Well, that's finally what did happen, Art.
Right. I know. We'll get there. So, okay, there's so much more to this. So how did it end up with Gary? I mean.
Well, Gary was a complete believer at that point. I mean,
yeah.
You know, when it's in front of your face and you can touch it and feel it and look at it, it's undeniable. you know, when it's in front of you, in person, there's no question that you're looking at something that wasn't human and that was some kind of biological creature.
Mm-hmm.
He was adamant. He was excited and wanted to get this to people who could do something with it and investigate it and take it. I wanted people to take it away. That's what I wanted.
I understand that. Completely.
I literally wanted to be done with it. So
right.
when he started to tell me there are people who are into this and will help you, will help us. Now it was us. Now it was his project. And I was happy at that. I was very happy uh-huh. for that because I really didn't want to deal with it in so many ways. But he said, we're going to call some people. We're going to start making some inquiries on who would be the best to talk to. And he said, we talked about this at long length. I said, well, we can bring some of the other professors that I work with at the University of Washington.
That would have been good.
Anthropology people, you know, other
sure.
medical doctors. We can all bring in. Well, we made a list. We started calling those people. Some of those people came to my house. Some of those people saw the body. Some of them didn't come.
And how many saw it? How many, doctor?
During the first 9 days, and there's a reason I'm referencing 9 days.
Okay.
There were probably, including Gary and myself, there were probably 8 other people,
right.
or ten, let's say 10 people. And that included some of my own family, my girlfriend, some very good close friends of mine, and some people that I worked with who I respected. So there was no question that this was really there. Because other mm-hmm. people saw it, other people even took pictures of it. But to make the story, long story short, the sanity of this was short-lived because the next day when Gary started to call people, we started to realize that there was funny sounds on our phone. There was extra little click sounds on our phone, and I thought,
really?
Well, you know, why is that, you know? And then we called some people who were from supposedly the MUFON group, Mutual UFO Network.
Yep, well, I was going to ask about that.
And we told them, what if somebody had something like this? Kind of similar to the facts that you were sent, Art.
Right.
And what would you do? Who would you talk to? Who could you trust? What would you actually do with something like this? So we started asking those questions hypothetically, but seriously. Most people hung up. Most people, we called Air Force, we called the police, we called a lot of different groups who basically didn't want to have anything to do with it because they thought it's a prank. It's got to be some kind of a fraternity prank or something.
Sure.
But when we called the MUFON people, they were excited. They were very happy. They gave us good information to not to tell anybody else, not to talk about it. They wanted to meet me in a public place. They asked if I could bring some of the pictures, if I had them developed. And within a day, I had them developed.
Within a day, okay.
Yeah. We, you know, photo processing, there was a lot of independent photo processors who you could run the film up to, and they'd have it to you, you know, in 4 or 5 hours.
Right.
So that's what we did. And so anyway, consequently, we met with these people. I gave them a box of things, you know, pictures and some negatives and a few other things.
You had an awful lot of proof.
Yeah, yeah, I did at that time. And I gave it to them, and then they said, okay, well, here's, you know, another number for us. Call us back, and, you know, we'll definitely be talking to you by tomorrow at a certain time. Well, that time came and went. They never called. We called the number. It didn't exist. It was an out-of-order number. We called a MUFON number that was listed in the directory. That's, you know, a paper book for those who don't know, the phone book. And they said they never had heard from us. They said that they had never gotten a call from us. So somebody had intercepted my phone, my phone calls, had, you know, pretended to be MUFON, and now had my about 50% of my evidence. So, and then it got worse. And then people started coming to my door and knocking on my door. Three individuals who were dressed in black, who drove a great big black car, and who were very strange the way they talked to me.
In what sense? How?
In that it was almost hypnotic, their conversation. It felt like you were a little bit sleepy when they were talking to you.
Their Are these the traditional men in black?
Well, they were in black suits, and they looked like that to me. But I had never heard that term before myself.
I understand. Doctor, and hold on. We've got to take a break. Dr. Jonathan Reed is my guest. We're crashing websites all over the place. That I know because I'm crashing here. Alien in the Freezer story. I'm Art Bell. This is Dark Matter.
Much like SiriusXM, is all around you. To beam up with us, please dial 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
I spoke briefly with Keith Rowland during the break. And I said, Keith, things are crashing over here. He tells me the website's still alive, limping a little but alive, and what's crashing is Google. So Google, in trying to get the messages to me, is gulping hard and falling over. This is Dark Matter, everybody. Dr. Jonathan Reed is my guest. And we're talking about a classic story called The Alien in the Freezer. And no joke, I know that a lot of you are probably sitting there wishing it was a joke, but it's not. Dr. Reed, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
Just pick right up and go to where you want to go. We've got, I guess it's not yet, but we've got three witnesses who can attest to the things that you're saying right now. So rather than me trying to decide the appropriate time for them to come in, you tell me.
I will do that. I will do that. And
okay,
that'll be
good.
Shortly.
Okay, good.
Let me just say these people who came to my house were organized, they were professional, they were definitely stating facts that I didn't believe they could know. They were telling me in a very calm, professional manner, Dr. Reed, we know what you have. We know what you found. And if you don't give it to us, your whole life is going to change. Hmm. And they started softly saying change. Then they started saying, your life will never be the same. Neither will it be for your family and your friends. The threats were apparent.
Chad, it's almost like there's a bullet here with your name on it.
Essentially, a little bit less than that, but yes, definitely.
Same idea.
Yeah. And letting me know that they would take care of this unless I complied with their demands. And at that point,
so what did you tell them?
Well, I told them to get the bleep out of my house and that I was calling the police.
Very good.
And they calmly stood up and walked to the door, and they said, that's okay, the police are with us. And
I looked
out into the street behind their car, and there was a Seattle police car parking there.
Holy moly.
And they just
really?
Said, we will be in touch. You have an option. And I just again told them to get the bleep out of my yard and my house. I was angry. They said they were going to take away my life and my
Excuse me, doctor. We're now how far from the incident itself? How many days or weeks from
this,
the incident
this was,
itself?
This was 2 days.
2 days. Okay.
2 days in.
All right.
And I was angry. And they were right. There was a police car there. They drove away. The police car followed them. Well, at that point, I was angry. I was afraid. I was, quite honestly, I was very, very disturbed at that moment, thinking, how could the people that we pay to protect us be doing this to me? How could this turn around? Because I was a believer in the American way of life. I was a believer that your police department did things to protect you from people like this.
And I guess by now you believe this is part of the American way of life.
Oh, this is totally the American way of life.
Mm.
And now I've had it proven to me time and time and time again.
American exceptionalism. Mm.
So at that moment, I decided that I guess I couldn't trust those who I had hoped for. And I decided to take things into a little bit different direction. So Gary and I, prior to them arriving to my house, had divided up the remains of the evidence that I did have, and we sent some of it away, actually mailed it out of the country to a friend
Smart.
To keep for us, and thinking that what could be next, you know, somebody's going to break in here, somebody's going to steal everything or something. And so we did that. And the next day, I had a friend who was a doctor going to come over and view the body, who was a orthopedic surgeon that I worked with in the...
I don't blame you for mailing the evidence away, but you couldn't very well mail the body away.
Well, right. That was the truth. I couldn't really take that away. We considered it. We considered if I could get help from one of these guys from the university medical center, I figured I'd be home safe.
Sure.
And that was my idea, was to bring him over, let him take a look at this, and get him involved and take it to the university. That was my plan. So I had called him. He had answered the phone. He was very excited. I told him I had something that I wanted him to see, but I didn't identify it on the phone. I just said, you know, there's something you need to visually see with your own eyes.
Is this one of our witnesses?
No.
Okay. All right.
But this was somebody I had known for years.
Mm-hmm.
And known him in some casual personal sense, being a friend, doing some things outside of work with. So he knew me. He knew that I was being serious. And he said, yeah, I will come over. And so the plan was he was going to come over that next day after these people were in my house, and the time came and went, and he didn't show up.
Oh.
And I called him, and I got him on the phone, and I said, you know, where are you? I expected you to be here 45 minutes ago. And he said, I can't do it. I just can't come. I can't be involved. And there's just too many, many things. I just can't. I can't say.
And so, in other words, he had been contacted.
Well, I later found out that is exactly what happened. Somebody had basically walked in and intimidated a lot of friends of mine. And the
okay, so your phone now is so totally tapped.
Right, right.
Simple
so
as
we're,
that.
So we're even talking cryptically when we're on the phone. We're not even saying anything specific. But anyway, I was angry. I was angry that he didn't come. You know, here's a friend that I needed, and he didn't come. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go back out to the garage. I had taken out a table and a big light to let this guy examine Freddy, you know, which
right.
we took to calling this alien Freddy because Gary said it reminded him of one of his old bosses.
So, Gary named him, I don't mean to laugh,
right,
Gary named him.
Exactly. Gary named him Freddy. I didn't want to give it a name. I didn't. I did not want to make it personal.
That was a killer of your dog.
Exactly. So I'm putting away the table, the folding table, and the light in the garage. And I hear this sound that sounds kind of like a scratching or a rubbing sound. And
oh,
I thought,
God.
Well, maybe it's the compressor or the freezer, because it was an older freezer that somebody had gave to me. And I thought, well, if the compressor's going out, you know, the body
can
decompose.
We're in serious trouble. Yep.
And then I thought, well, maybe it's rats, or maybe there's a rat, you know, or something in some paper or something behind the freezer or whatever. But anyway, I thought, okay, well, I'll look in the freezer because there's a thermometer inside the freezer door.
Right.
And if the temperature is going up, then obviously the compressor is broken.
Yes, sir.
So I just went over there, just like I had time and time again for the last 3 days, opened the door. And this thing that was in the thermal blanket unwound itself and stuck its head out and started screaming at me.
Oh, my God. All right. I, of course, remember this moment from the previous interview. Now, there is a recording of this scream. Now, how in the world and how did it get recorded? How did this happen?
Well, later on, not this moment, but later on, I had actually taken a video camera out to the garage in hopes of recording it. But not at this moment. But this scream actually came from later on. But it was the same type of scream.
I might be able to play it. Let me see if I can do that. That sound?
That's it. That's it. And it was so intense. It was so powerful that it felt like it was pushing against your chest, pushing you away from this, like it was some kind of defensive move. And at that moment, I think I've got a bigger problem. This thing is alive or half alive, and it's going to kill me for attacking it. And I literally ran in the house. And I left the door open. I didn't care. I hoped it would run away. And I just ran in the house and slammed the door and called Gary and said, we got a bigger problem.
A really big problem.
And, of course, he didn't believe me.
Really?
And I said, you've got to come over here. And he went through the same process, the same idea. Well, Jonathan, you know, you're probably just stressed. You're probably still just sick. And
I'm just
said,
listening, and I'm stressed.
And all I said was, come with me. I'm not going to say anything to you. Come with me. And we went in the garage, and of course he was just, you know, perfectly fine. Until I opened the freezer, and it came out and started screaming at him. And I didn't think he was going to stop running. Because he ran out of that garage and just kept going. He couldn't even get to the door fast enough.
Bye, Gary.
And we both left the freezer door and the door to the garage completely open. It could have run away any time it wanted, and I was hoping it would. But
I know it's crazy to ask you, but I mean, this thing has now been in the freezer, you know, days and days. It should be pretty much, you know, like a steak after being in the freezer for a few days.
I would assume that too, Art, except for the fact that there are creatures in our world that live at 52 degrees below zero all their life.
There are. It's true.
Penguins.
And we've got to at least guess that they may have come from a world where that's a fairly normal climate. So good point.
Or maybe the cold somehow induced some kind of time for it to heal. But the fact is, it was never dead. It was alive, breathing and screaming. So the entire time that I had it, in my Jeep, in my house, on the floor, looking at it with my friends, it was alive. It was playing possum. You know, I mean, maybe in the woods and in my Jeep, maybe it was unconscious. But the truth is, and I think you've seen the tape, is when I opened it up in my house on the garage floor and videotaped it after it was home, thinking that it was just completely dead with a big hole in its head with blood and everything else, it was actually moving. You can see in the videotape that it blinks its eyes and it moves its facial muscles just a little bit when I'm not hovering directly over it.
All right, folks. It's all at artbell.com. What he's referencing, the photographs, the evidence, the video, it's all up on artbell.com right now. So,
and what's important to say here, Art, is I wasn't the one who pointed out that he was moving and his eyes were moving. Somebody else who saw the video actually pointed that out to me years later. But you know, the truth of it is, Art, I didn't care. I was more concerned with the thing tearing me apart than its eyes blinking. You know, that was a bigger concern for me. But the reality is, it seemed to want to stay in the freezer. Because I went back out there a few hours later with Gary, and it was inside the freezer, and the door was closed. And I thought, well, maybe the lid came down on his head or something, or maybe he passed out or is unconscious. And so I again cracked open the lid of the freezer, and this time it didn't scream. It just kind of looked up at me and made some weird chirpy squeaky sounds, kind of almost like a bird or a dolphin sound. And
all right. At this point, doctor, I think tell me about the witnesses.
Okay.
We've got Robert Rafe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Harold, pronounce his last name, Chacon, okay. And Dan McFoy, is that correct?
Let me explain who those people are for your audience that don't know.
Please do.
Robert Rafe was a writer, a freelance writer, who after nine days of having this hell in my house and having my life torn apart, I left the country. I left the United States. I went to Canada because I didn't want my friends, my family, to continue to be harassed. They were burning effigies in their lawns. They were, you know, screaming at them on the phone. There were trucks driving through people's yards. I mean, you name it. Even during that time, there were some people hurt. They were physically beat up by people. But But I decided I'm not going to put people through this. I'm going to get out of here.
Wait, doctor. All the commotion you just talked about could only come if the news was out, but good.
Well, the news was out enough so that all of my friends were now being threatened.
Gotcha. Okay.
So there was enough people, I call them the dark side, who had basically taken over
decided to
put a squash on everything and anybody who was associated with me or my life.
Let's come back to the witnesses. This is really important.
Robert's name was given to me after a year I had been gone. And I sat in a basement of a house with a gun in one hand and his phone number in the other. I was ready to kill myself because my life was over. Nothing was the way it should have been. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't work. My job had been taken away from me. I'd lost thousands of dollars. My life had been erased. All of my accreditation from all my colleges was gone. So I figured I can shoot myself anytime. I might as well make this phone call. So I called this number, and these people said to me, "Jonathan, what can we do to help you? We know you're in distress." Okay, well, this number wasn't Robert. This number was other people who I call the Alliance, who basically helped me, who basically got me healthy. I had lost over 100 pounds. I had been stealing food just to survive. You know, I was homeless for a year. And
okay, we're way down line in the story now.
Well, not really. And now I called the number. The people told me, "We'll get you better. And maybe you're going to want to talk to somebody about this story someday. Maybe you're going to want to chronicle this." So they gave me the name of Robert, this freelance writer. And I called him, and I talked to him, and I said, "I've got a story, but I got to talk to you about it face to face."
Okay. Right.
So he came from California. He went and met me, and he listened to what I had to say. He probably thought I was insane to begin with.
Probably.
And I'll let you talk to him about that.
All right.
That's where he enters the story.
If we can get hold of Robert Wraith briefly, I don't want to keep him on the line for a long time. I just would like to, ask him what he can fill in here, what he knows. So Robert would be the logical first one to get on the line, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He knows a lot. He ended up spending over a year with me just to chronicle the story, just to write the book.
Okay.
And then he also has been part of my ongoing team for the last 17 years.
Okay. He'll be an interesting guy to talk to. And then there's two more. I don't know if we can get to them all, but I would like to know.
Yeah, Dan McAvoy is a UFO researcher, has been for 20-plus years. He's a expatriate. He's an Army Ranger and paratrooper, has tremendous valor and honor and respect. And he volunteered to help research my case.
Okay.
To walk in my shoes, to walk alongside of me, to go prove to him that I was who I said I was, that my life, in fact, had been destroyed and torn apart. And so he did that. He did that for 2 years.
Okay. What will Robert Wraith say?
Well, I think Robert is going to tell you that, you know, he did write the book with me. He did chronicle everything about the story, everything that I've said so far. The book we wrote is called Link, An Extraterrestrial Odyssey. It's the first 9 days of this whole event.
Okay.
It's how it happened. It's how it laid out.
All right. If we have Robert, let's bring him on.
Okay.
Okay. We don't have him yet.
Okay.
We've got two other witnesses. So
just tell me,
Rob, you sort of told me Robert would verify that he saw all the evidence. Did Robert see things that we have not seen photographs of or heard?
Yes.
He did. Okay.
Yes.
Did any of these people, these three people see the creature itself.
Yes.
Who?
Robert saw it.
Robert. Okay, good. Well, we're trying to get Robert on the line.
Okay, so, and Dan McAvoy, the other UFO researcher, saw and experienced a lot of what went on in my life and what has since gone on since I was on the radio with you, Art, for the last 12 years. He has walked with me. He has been with me different places around the world. He also has seen something that I call the Link artifact.
Okay.
And this is a silver bracelet type object that I found in the forest next to the body when I originally encountered this situation. I didn't know what it was at first. When I saw it under the brush, it almost looked like a silvery Coca-Cola can, but it wasn't. I picked it up and I put it in with the body and I brought it home.
Hmm. Okay, I guess we're having some difficulty getting hold of these folks. What we're going to do is take a brief break right here.
Okay.
See what we can do. We do have numbers and contact information for Robert Rafe and the other two witnesses. Whether we can get them through a jammed-up phone system, we'll see. I'm Art Bell, and this is Dark Matter.
Dark Matter with Art Bell and be part of the SiriusXM's VLS very large signal. Please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Well, all right. Very interesting. We had a wrong number. Somehow in the translation of the doctor giving the number to my producer and my producer giving it to me, the number was wrong. So we've got the right number now. Or at least we had the number. And we're going to get Robert Rafe on here shortly, I hope. So I'm told that we're reaching out to him right now. Sorry about that, Doctor. I do understand you related that number any number of times, and it came out wrong. So,
you know, technology, Art. Technology.
Yeah. Well, from, you know, whispering in one ear to whispering in another ear, not really whispering, but transferring numbers of so many people, it happens.
Oh, easily.
Everybody should know whether or not we actually get Robert on the phone. In the first interview, we had Robert. We had the doctor. We had Dan McAvoy. We had them all on the air, and hopefully we're going to have them on the air tonight, too. But there seems to be some mix-up in the... in the numbers, and my producer or my board op is welcome to whisper in my ear when we're set.
Okay.
So, in the meantime, Robert would say that he saw the creature. Yes.
Yes.
Dr. Harold Chacon, he's a microbiologist, right?
Harold Chacon is a microbiologist.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's an immunologist. Is actually okay. What he is. He deals with. Biology and immunology and little things, microscopic things, and all those kind of virusy things.
Okay.
And he actually did some testing of some of the blood samples of this creature.
What did he find?
Well, it's interesting what he found. He found that there were 46 chromosomes, the same as we have, you know, and but nine of the pair were different. They were not human, but they could only be identified as being similar to sea tortoise and something relating to dolphin.
Huh. Isn't that interesting? All right. At what point did you... Yes, at what point did you get him involved? I mean...
Well, he actually had called us after we had been on the radio with you. And he actually said he would be willing to help us if we needed anything. And I had gotten a hold of some of those samples that were sent away,
mm-hmm.
luckily. And we took them to the head pathologist of the University of Washington Medical Center.
Yes, sir.
And I asked him if he would do a study of this tissue. And I did not tell him what it was. I did not state anything other than I wanted to know what it was. And he said, fine, I will take a good look at it, and, you know, whatever we can figure out, I will let you know.
Okay. We've got to close something out here because at this point, of course, the alien, when we last heard, was alive.
Yes.
What befell? What happened to the alien?
Well, during the rest of the days before I left town, left the country, I would go back into the garage and I would open the freezer and it became familiar with me, I think more than I was with it. It at least no longer screamed at me,
right.
But it would now make little chirpy, squeaky sounds, and I would talk to it like I was talking to my dog, like I was talking to a member of my family, just to try to get it to calm down, to try to reassure that I wasn't going to attack it, because now it was a living thing. It was much different, and it was injured to me, and it was moving slowly, and it wasn't being aggressive toward me. It was liking its environment, if you can imagine that.
I guess I can.
And
freezer.
And it was ready. It could leave any time. I did not lock it in the freezer. It actually would get out of the freezer on its own, sit in front of the freezer, kind of rock back and forth in a very fluid motion, and look at me with these big 2-inch oval eyes and almost peer into my mind. It started to communicate through telepathy. It started to reach inside of me, and I could see images of my life as a child, as a young man, as if it was playing them to me like a movie in my mind. But so vivid and so clear that I could feel the air, I could feel the grass under my feet, I could smell it.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And this went on for how long?
Until I left town on the 10th day.
And the alien?
Well, on the 9th day, I came back home, drove home from my house after being with Gary for a while. And I drove home in the evening, and I drove up to my house, and I found that there were two vans parked up on my lawn with men going in and out of my front door with, you know, dollies taking things out of my house. So I didn't want to stop, so I went somewhere else and came back later and found that my house had been totally ransacked, totally destroyed. They had probed the walls and the floor and the ceiling. They had taken the toilet off of the floor mounts. There was water spewing everywhere. They had probed the grass in the lawn looking for things with some kind of object. There were holes in the grass. I went to the garage, and the freezer was gone. They had
the freezer, the whole freezer.
The whole freezer was gone. Also, some other things that didn't make any sense. They had taken a whole cord of wood that was piled in the garage. Okay, they had taken...
Well, you know what? If some government agency, whatever it would be, became aware that you had this, Yeah, I understand. It would disappear. A lot of things in your home would disappear.
What I found when I went to that garage, when I saw what I saw, there were small frosty, wet footprints going across the floor and to the wall, stopping like it walked through the wall. It didn't go to the door. It didn't go to the other big door, which had been pried out of the wall with pry bars. It just went to the wall. And I thought, maybe he got away. Maybe he actually got away.
All right. I'm going to stop you for a second. We finally got Robert on the line. I want to try and bring him into the conversation. Robert, is that you?
That's me, Art. How are you doing?
Hi, Robert. Oh, my goodness. We're glad to get you on the air. It was quite a chore to get you on there, but here you are. Can you please tell us, I guess, what you know to be true, what you saw with your own eyes, and whether you can verify what parts of this story you can verify?
Well, you know, Art, I've been to the site where Jonathan first had his experience. And the site is strange. There's a tree there, and it's actually growing, and all its branches are pointing in one direction. And there have been people up there to do tests. Also, you know, I'm Freddy, and I've experienced him. He's popped in and popped out, and I've seen him a number of times.
So you have seen Freddy?
I have seen Freddy, and I, when I first met Jonathan, Jonathan had called me. I was out of state, and I had flown in, and I had received a phone call late at night, and it was Jonathan. I didn't know who he was, and he was, you know, telling me about this story and what had happened. He had been given a list with my name on it, and, you know, I didn't know him from Adam. And at first, I just thought it was, you know, a prank call or something. But as time went on, I became intrigued. And I heard the distress in his voice. And I was just really concerned. And after a few hours, I decided, you know, I'm going to get back on a plane and fly and meet with him. And I did. When I had walked into the place, it was a public place. It was a restaurant. When I had walked in, I didn't know, you know, what he looked like or anything. I was looking for him, and all of a sudden I heard Robert, and I turned around, and there he was. And I was distressed because I felt, how does this man know who I am, what I look like? How did he get my phone number? And I sat down, and we began to converse. And over a period of time, he brought out photographs. He brought out tapes. He brought out elements of the story to be verified. And I was just astounded, you know. And, you know, it was beyond my circle of thought, you know. And
way beyond mine, too.
And, Art, he was distressed. He was very sick. He had lost a lot of weight, you could tell. He was shaking, he was paranoid, and, you know, and rightly so. And what I had done is, you know, I had stayed up there and talked to him for a few days. We stayed at a hotel, then I took him back to my place and began to work with him. He had severe PTSD and other problems. And
I would imagine.
It took some time to really get to know the man and to work with him and to do my best to aid him. He refused any other outside help. He was quite terrified. He had obviously been being pursued, and he had been physically abused and all kinds of horrific things. What I decided to do, as he was talking to me, because he said, you know, we need to document this. And he had a lot of documentation, but he wanted to put it in a form that all of us could better understand. And so that's what he did. You know, I'm a ghostwriter, And that's one of the reasons, you know, he communicated with me that, and I had been involved in other projects concerning people in difficult situations.
Okay, well, the important thing to me is you saw Freddie.
I saw Freddie, yes.
Okay.
And I will,
you know,
say,
getting other voices to verify this is very, very important, Robert. So
I agree.
I really thank you for coming on. I'm sorry there was a mix-up in trying to get your number, but trust me, I appreciate your coming on the air. I truly do.
Oh, that's no problem.
All right. Thank you, Robert, and take care.
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
You know, Art, something to add to this at this moment is, in all the years that have since followed from when Robert first met me, you know, Freddie still is around. He kind of doesn't leave me alone. He's become like, I don't know, my shadow. He's been seen by
shadow
hundreds of people that have been around me.
But he's in the hands of some government agency.
No. He's in the hands of his own.
How do you know this?
Because he pops in and out all the time.
Right, but when you left,
yes,
after your house had been ransacked,
right,
Freddie was gone. So Freddie,
he walked out and went back to his own.
And took the freezer with him?
No, but the apparently the men in black took the freezer, but they didn't take him, because within about a month or so, Freddie just appeared in the room next to me. He just winked in and sat and watched me for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then he just faded out. And again, I thought I was having, you know, insane illusions.
Well, I've seen Freddie's picture on the website, Doctor, and he didn't look to be in great health at the time you took that photograph. Did he in some way heal?
Well, as far as what I can figure out, during the time, the first 3 days when we were taking him in and out of the freezer, showing him to some of my colleagues and friends,
right,
I had actually taken a piece of duct tape and taped the skull flap closed on his head. Just so that it wouldn't fall off with the shards of skin and other brain material that was there. I did it only out of the process of thinking it's not going to make a mess.
Duct tape brain surgery.
Well, it was dead, Art.
I do understand.
And the duct tape was in the garage.
Maybe being in the freezer had a healing effect on him.
Well, as far as what everybody has told me in years since, it must have. We know that there are some creatures, even on Earth here, that have brains that are kind of split in half in a way that they can pretty much function even on just half a brain, that their motor functions can still... And we even know with humans extreme brain injury, our brains have the amazing ability to reconnect to different parts of our own brain.
You're absolutely correct. I know. I've heard of cases of people with half their brain destroyed are still able to articulate. It's amazing.
Right.
I know. So, good point.
So the point is, he's alive and well and still visiting. And in some ways, it's a very strange situation. Because even after knowing this, even after experiencing this time and time and time again, it's still terribly unnerving to me. It's not normal to have something just appear in the corner of the room or when you're sitting, you know, in the bathroom. It's just unnerving to have
all right
materialize.
Doctor, in the next break, we're going to make an attempt to get hold of Dr. Harold Chacon, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody who had an opportunity to actually test tissue and blood samples and did a study is worth talking to. So we're going to attempt to get hold of him in the next break. It's kind of tough. Our phone system is jammed to the gills. But
he was one of three people that did this testing. The other two are dead.
Oh. Then there's one other thing, Doctor. I want to open the phone lines, and I want to allow people to ask questions. And some of them are probably going to be rough.
Some
of them are probably just going to be inquisitive. Some of them are going to be shocked. But I'd like to be able to open the phone lines and allow you to try and answer questions.
Sure.
I hope people will be polite. Were you given a lie detector test?
Actually, Art, I experienced two of those. Which
two.
I set up myself.
Okay.
I basically asked to have it done through the UCLA crime department, criminology department, and also I did one in Seattle too. And
okay, I don't want to be impolite. I don't want to be impolite, but I do want to ask these questions.
Yes, I passed them both.
You know, incredible stories and incredible proof and all of that sort of thing, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Before we go to the phones, is there anything else really important? I know the story goes on and on. At one point, you were shot.
Yes.
I remember that. You know, even with long-form talk radio and the luxury of all the time we have, we've already chewed up a lot of it, so I want to be able to open the lines. Anything else you really, really want to get out before we do that?
Well, the device... The cuff that I found that I call the link artifact is functional.
It's functional?
It's functional.
Its function is what?
Well, it's kind of a communication device and also a type of teleportation device.
And you have this device now?
I still have it. It's not in my possession, but I still have it. It's in good hands in non-communist Russia.
Yeah, I think I'd have it in a very, very safe place myself.
And what it does is truly fantastic.
Let me tell you something, and everybody else at the same time. I was mailed some pieces that were allegedly from a UFO, one that crashed back in Roswell. And I've held on to those. I gave Larry King a piece, and I've held on to those pieces for a very, very long time. Linda's had them professionally tested, and Linda Moulton Howe, and she'll be on the program to talk about it. But what I'm getting at here is I've had some disturbances around those objects. And because of that, I've kept them in a very, very safe location. So
yes,
don't come looking because it's already happened.
And it's already in a safe place beyond my control. So
I don't blame you. I don't blame you a bit.
But what's kind of interesting, Art, is the materials that you found in your pieces of metal are also in my piece. The link artifact was analyzed in Osaka, Japan in 1999 by the University of Osaka.
Really?
And they did metallurgy testing and biochemistry testing and x-rays and all kinds of things. And they
do tell. What did they find?
They found that the basic materials were silicone polymer, beryllium, aluminum, magnesium, copper, zinc, bismuth, gold,
and
some unknown, unidentifiable materials. That the layers inside of this thing, even though it's very thin in its actual thickness, it's only about 3/16 of an inch thick, is made up of layer after layer of micron type layers, 3 to 4 microns in depth.
Wow.
That is like plant material, like the fibers in a plant leaf. and they believe that this is a biological living biology.
All right. It's
a machine.
All right. To clean up one thing before we take the break and then start to take calls. So, folks, mm-hmm. if you want to dial now, be my guest. And we're going to screen the call. So just to make sure you've got an appropriate question. The obelisk itself, did anybody go back? Did anybody check whether it was still there?
We did the next day. Gary drove back, took a trailer and chains and a truck, and he was bound and determined to drag that thing out of the forest one way or another. It was gone. But the more interesting thing is all the plants and the ferns that I tore out underneath it were put back like it was pristine, like nothing had ever happened in that space.
Wow.
Like time had been reversed in that place.
Okay. All right, Doctor, hold tight right there. Now we are going to open the lines. If you have a question for Dr. Reed, please give us a call. The number is 1-855-REAL-UFO, or if you wish, 1-855-732-5836. Now, I am led to think I understand that our lines are now open to Canadians as well as Americans. If you have a question, now would be the time. We're going to take a break here. And if we're able to get any other witnesses, we'll pursue that as well. We've got a couple of other numbers of witnesses here. It's quite a tale, no question about it. Alien in the freezer. This is Dark Matter on Sirius XM.
Initiate a dialogue sequence with Art Bell. Please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
It's a pleasure to be with you this night. My guest is Dr. Jonathan Reed, and I hope you've heard the story. If not, there's not going to be any way to catch you up. You'll have to get it on the repeat. But we're talking about an alien encounter. A very, very, very serious alien encounter. And we've got another witness who's coming forward. He would be Dan McAvoy, who is a UFO research investigator. We've got a call in to the microbiologist as well. But Dan McAvoy, if you're there, speak up now.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
Hey.
It's great to be back on and your show to be back on here. Something sorely missed.
Oh, thank you so very much.
No.
Supposed to say Roswell's. All right. As briefly as you're able, Dan, you mm-hmm. are a UFO research investigator.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get in contact with Jonathan, and what did you do?
Well, I had heard him on your show back in 1999, I believe it was, and I was intrigued, and then heard him again on the show. And then realized that out in Laughlin, Nevada, there would be a convention where he would speak for the first time and present his book and his information. And I decided to go out there. And as you would say, I wanted to take that ride. And I wanted to do it on this because this was not like anything else that I've seen. We've seen lights in the sky. We've seen possible abductions, but this goes way beyond.
Way beyond, yes. Okay. In what way can you witness for him?
Well, I have, of course, spoken to people, videotaped people, people that knew him, professors, friends. I documented his life. We spent 15 years together doing this. Mm-hmm. And I guess, the probably the strangest or most climactic experience was when Jonathan and I went to a hotel room with two other folks, and we shut the door, and everything was, lit as it should be. We sat across from these two folks at a table. Basically, they said, "Jonathan, do you feel like doing this? You sure?" Mm-hmm. And he said, "Absolutely." And with that, one of them pulled a blue blanket, not blanket, but a blue wrap cloth out of his jacket pocket, and he laid it on the table, and it turned out to be the linked artifact itself, not in any encased in anything. It was just there.
Okay.
And Jonathan grabbed it, and before the three of us could do anything, he had already put it on his wrist, and it began to seem to clamp down on his wrist because of the three needles that are on the underside. Oh. And it seemed to turn blue, and the hardest part is that I think it was a form of teleportation because he wasn't there. After that, he shook violently, and then it appears he was gone out of the room.
When you say he shook violently, Jonathan, is that the same kind of shake that you observed with the creature? I don't know if Jonathan's still there. Let me just ask you, was it that kind of vibration? I'm sure you've heard him describe it a million times, that alien vibrating at such a fast rate. Was it like that?
It was like that, and that's what leads me to conclude that perhaps it was an interdimensional thing because of the vibration, and it is similar to the vibrations that that the alien and his dog encountered. It was almost too hard to see.
All right.
And then perhaps, in those kind of moments, minutes can seem like seconds. And within that time, 15, 30 seconds, a minute at the most, there was a flash of light from up in the corner, sort of a golden light,
and
there he was. Just as he was sitting at the table 2 minutes ago.
So you actually saw him disappear, and you saw him reappear.
Exactly.
Okay, and you worked with the J. Allen Hynek Group, and you worked with MUFON, right?
Well, yes, and, this case has put a schism between those folks. There's been so much controversy, that they did nothing for me and was just abused and just a not, the organizations aren't what they used to be.
I understand.
And, it's a shame. But
and it was over this case, huh?
Well, as far as I can tell from all the publications, talking with all the prominent researchers in the field, that's the sense I get. And it's because there's so much here, it roots so deep that others just want to skim off the top. And, right. you know, and the other correlation, I think, is money. Through this, we've Always. Never, in 15 years, have never taken money from anyone. We did it for free. We gave books for free. We handed them out to free. And this goes from California to Seattle, all the way down throughout Mexico, down into Central America, and then into South America. And it was so big, and the reception was so great that we didn't have to sell any books. You know, it didn't matter.
I hear you.
We gave books away just because.
Dan, sorry,
go ahead.
You're an ex-Army Ranger. Close combat
yes.
weapons specialist, paratrooper,
yes,
awarded many credits of valor and honor in your service. Thank you for your service to the country, by the way.
You're quite welcome.
And one more thing. I understand that you've had a series of strokes lately.
Yes.
So your coming on tonight really means a lot to me. Thank you.
No, Art, thank you. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
All right. You take care, my friend. And again, thank you for the witnessing. And thank you, especially not being fully healthy, taking the time to come on the radio. That's big to me.
No, Art. It was my pleasure. And I'm so excited that you're back on, that, you know, we can be at the pinnacle again, you. And that's a great thing.
Dan, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. That was Dan McAvoy. Obviously an amazing guy, and he has been in ill health, and it took a lot for him to come on tonight. Doctor, are you still there?
Yes, I am, Art.
Okay.
May I add something at this moment?
Yeah, sure.
You know, Dan McAvoy is a great man. He is a great friend, and he has sacrificed a lot for me. And there are a lot of others who have sacrificed a lot, plus their lives. There are 9 people who gave their life to help me, and other researchers who gave me support who are no longer with us also. Some of these people were murdered, in my opinion, to keep this from coming out to the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are people like Wendell Stevens and Donald Ware and Dr. John Mack and Zachariah Sitchin, Dan McAvoy, Dave Thomas, Zachariah Enoch. These are all people from all over the world who gave me their time and found out that what I was saying was true. And they gave their lives to protect me and to get this truth out. And I thank them forever.
Right. There's been so much controversy around this case. All right, Dr. Reed, we're going to take some calls, if that's okay with you.
Yes, perfect.
Let's rock. Hello there, Dark Matter. You're on the air with Dr. Reed.
Yes, Art, thanks for taking my call, first of all, and Roswell's to you, sir.
Thank you.
My question is for Dr. Reed, obviously. Did the alien ever relay to you through telepathy or otherwise as to its possible origin and why it might have been in the forest that day? Why did you run into it? Did he hint to you in any way for the possibilities of this? Thank you for taking my question. I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure. It's a good one, too.
Yes.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Yes, he did. After a period of years of communicating with this little guy, I have kind of built up some idea about how he formulates his communication.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he's a genetically engineered worker. He is designed and built to do the same type of job that we would send a rover to do on Mars. But the only difference is he's biology. He was designed to be in our environment, in our atmosphere.
So he's like a biological probe.
Exactly. But he has all the sensitivities of a living person. He is alive. He is a living creature who has feelings and curiosities. He's very curious. but he doesn't have a great extensive knowledge base. I think it's designed so that it does a job. It was built to do a job. And for the most that we can determine, that was something to do with geology of the area that I found
okay.
it in. That he was doing something to do with the earth and the geology. He talks. He makes sounds. I even have a recording of what it sounds like when he was in the garage with me, when he would make this chirpy, squeaky sound.
Do you have that with you?
Yes, I can play it.
Play it.
Part of it. Okay, it's a little difficult to hear, but you'll hear me in the background.
Go for it.
That's actually his.
All right, that almost sounds like a Geiger counter, a click, kind of clicking sounds, huh?
Well, when you listen to it in its entirety, you can actually hear him become more excited at one point and less excited at another. When I hand him a cup of water, he takes it from me and actually throws it at the empty cup at me to test me, to watch my reaction. Now, this isn't something that a non-intelligent being would do. This
all right.
Is something that an animal would do.
All right, back to the phones. Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Reed. Have you took any DNA samples of this space alien? And I'm SR-71 from Coast Gap. Goodbye.
Okay. And there were samples taken, right?
Yes, there were blood and tissue samples. Harold Chacon and two other biologists did the work. Two of them are dead. The head pathologist, the University of Washington Pathology Department, was killed in his office when they were ready to release this within a week.
But again, the results of the testing?
Many of the results are still available. We have actually published them on the web years and years ago.
Okay.
And of course, as soon as we would publish them, they would amazingly disappear within moments.
Of course. Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello.
Hello. When I encountered an alien in with my time with the Air Force, it made those strange noises, too, and I could see the membrane in its mouth moving around. And the closest thing that I've ever heard recorded, unfortunately, that recording, it was really hard for us to hear. It made wind chime-like noises that the closest thing I've ever heard of was the demon-possessed children. Sometimes they'll make tones that sound like wind chimes that are just things that a human vocal cord couldn't make. I'm just wondering if you could tell us any more about the chimes and sounds.
He did make kind of a whistling, chiming sound sometimes. And I think it depended on his mood, his curiosity at the moment. He was extremely afraid, just like I was.
He's right. That holding the phone up to that was insufficient. To me, it sounded like clicks, and I'm sure to the audience it did as well. It didn't go beyond that, but when you're trying to, you know, just hold a phone line, you're a player, it doesn't work that well.
But yes, he did make these kind of sounds. And to answer the previous caller, we believe that he's from either Orion or the Andromeda area of the sky.
How did he relate that information to you?
With a map of the sky and the stars and the constellations.
Okay.
Everything he speaks through is imagery, is either geometry or actual imagery. And not in words, but in visualization.
Mm-hmm.
And we've created a database of this information, not only from me, but from hundreds of other people and their encounters too. That's currently what I'm doing, is working with a Russian space communication group to build a database to communicate directly with them.
Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello.
Yeah, hey, first word, I just want to say Roswell. And Dr. Reed, I was wondering, now if I understand your description correctly, Freddie was an organic being aided by inorganic technology. And I actually have a two-part question. The unfortunate loss of your dog, do you think that was just a reflexive fear-threat reaction? And did Freddie use, do you think he used his own capabilities or the technology?
Okay. In regard to this, I believe that Freddie probably was only defending himself when my dog came upon him. And it was like as if we were attacked by a wild animal. You do whatever you have to do to defend yourself, your life. And I believe that's actually what he was doing. But I believe that the technology of his suit, of this black suit that expanded itself around the head of my dog, was a defense mechanism to protect Freddie himself. So that's my belief. I have since spent lots of time apologizing to Freddie, telling him I didn't know what I was doing, that I didn't mean to hurt him, and that I now know he was only trying to defend himself.
Did Freddie actually say anything to you about your dog? I mean,
no.
Was there communication? No.
No. There's never been any kind of indication that he even understands what I said regarding my dog.
So you think that was a purely defensive mechanism?
Yes, I do.
All right. Hello there. You're on the air on Dark Matter with Dr. Reed.
Hi, Art. Jake here. Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Reed,
you bet.
You said that he communicated with you, and another caller asked that question, and you answered it pretty good. Have you ever gotten any feelings about what they're looking for? Why are they here?
Mm-hmm.
I know they're here checking out plant life, that kind of thing, but what is their purpose? Is there something more that they're wanting to do?
Yes, there
Wonderful
is.
Wonderful question. Okay.
It's very involved, the answer, but the short answer is yes, I have a pretty good idea of what they are doing. They are caretakers. They are caretakers of life, not only of plant life, but all life. This planet is nothing more than a huge, huge melting pot of life. A jewel in the universe, as some would say, where beings, where creatures have been put possibly to thrive and survive. And maybe we are the same. Maybe we are part of that group that was put here and that we are also being carefully tended to, carefully loved.
Were you made aware of his mission? I mean, for example, that encounter in the woods and the obelisk, he had to be in the middle of some mission or movement or something to be there at that time for you to have that encounter. What was Freddie doing? Were you ever made aware?
It was something to do with the geology of the area that they were monitoring. Something to do with that area. What's very interesting is if you take a compass up to that location, it'll just spin. It'll just spin endlessly.
Really?
And other people have gone there.
To this very day?
To this very day. Other people have gone there and checked out radiation samples, ground samples, and found that there is an extra amount of radiation that seems to be in a 300-foot degree area.
More evidence.
There is so much, Art. It's mind-boggling.
All right. Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello. Hello, hello,
hello.
Hello. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know I was on the line there.
You
I'm
are.
Being Roswell, to you, Art.
Thank you.
Jonathan, I'm wondering that object that you described being stationary, that sounds an awful lot like me, like an obelisk. Like
well, that,
2001.
Well, that is what I called it, the obelisk.
Okay. And when you fell against it and you froze your hand, I'm wondering if that was its living chamber where it's the same as if it was in your freezer?
I don't think so. I never felt that about that. I felt more that it was a doorway, maybe an interdimensional doorway that allowed him to come and go there using dimension, slipping dimension to travel through time and space.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Robert Ghost Wolf?
Yes. In fact, I have spoken with Robert Ghost Wolf many times.
I've interviewed him. Sure.
I remember. I've been a long-time listener of ours since 93. He
yeah.
described a lot of futuristic events happening due to fluctuation in vibrational levels, and I wonder, like you're surmising, is that this is an interdimensional being.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We felt the same way, and when talking with Robert, he said the same thing, that this was definitely that.
Somebody named Sam is coming through the wormhole and just asking, what was described to us, you know, that you disappeared with that bracelet and then reappeared. Sam is asking, where did you go? Are you able to tell us where you were during that apparent teleportation?
Sure. I became very, very violently in the moment when I put it on. It becomes a huge pressure inside of my chest, almost what must feel like a severe heart attack. It radiates to my extremities. I start to lose my sight down to almost a singular or tunnel type vision that becomes almost black. And then all of a sudden it becomes completely clear. And I was in a large oval egg shaped room, probably 50 feet high, 30 feet wide. And in that room was standing another entity, and I'm very careful about how I say this, that was probably 10 to 15 feet high, standing off the side of this wall, looking down on me. It was gold. It was large. It looked like it had big golden robe wrapped around it, almost like it had wings and a shape without a complete face. But in this second, when I was there, I was inside of it. It was inside of me. It was like being in the presence of an angel or God.
Did it communicate to you?
It communicated before I could even say anything. It was answering my thoughts. It was telling me, you are important. All life is important in the universe. There is one creator for all life, but we all have to work together to find the harmony in this life. And that is their job.
All right, Doctor, hold tight. Dr. Jonathan Reed is my guest. You're listening to Dark Matter, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio. I'm Art Bell.
To myself, what a wonderful world.
You're listening to Dark Matter with Art Bell. For you to really matter, please dial 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
You know, I find this music calms me, and frankly, I need a little calming right now. This is one hell of a story. Believe it, not believe it, think it's a hoax, think it's gospel, whatever. It's a hell of a story. That's all there is to it. Let's see. I've got a message from the wormhole asking, Doctor, if you know the coordinates to this location where the compasses spin and where all this occurred.
No, I don't know the exact compass coordinates. And to tell you the truth, I wouldn't give it out because people would go there and tear the site apart.
They would. They absolutely would. There's no question about it.
So I was very careful in locating it just a little bit out of the actual site when I wrote about it.
Good. Because, you know, what you're saying is the absolute truth. Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello.
Art Roswell. Roswell, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Thank you.
My initial call that I told the screener has been answered several times. So to jump from that, Dr. Reed, I was curious. You said that the alien spoke to you talking about how life is very important. And I was wondering if it had given you any sort of sense that it or they believe the human race to be a bit arrogant in assuming that we are the highest form and most important directive of life on this planet.
Hmm. Well, first of all, the one who told me about their feelings toward us was what I call the elder, one of the elders, which is a totally different kind of being from Freddy. This is a light being. This is energy, just pulsing energy that was inside of me the second I was there. I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to ever leave that spot. I've never felt so much love and tenderness in my life. It was like being in the arms of your mother. There was no feeling that we're arrogant to them. There was a feeling that we're naive, that we're young and we're very undeveloped, and that we need time to grow and nurture and feel what this life is really all about, that this life is to be lived, to find the harmony, to find the frequency in our lives, to learn to find that energy, that love that we are supposed to be experiencing.
No complaints about American exceptionalism, huh?
No.
Okay.
No identification of said area or
right,
territory.
Okay. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, you there?
I am indeed.
Mega ditto, sir. I'm sorry, Mega Roswells to you, Art.
Roswell. Thank you.
Hey, Dr. Reed, real quick, I'll cut to the chase and listen off the air, but obviously Freddie has turned your life upside down and many others around you. If you could take it all back, would you? Would you not want to be the one that had to deliver the message? Thank you.
What a great question. Thank you. Great question. Yeah, if you could undo it all, if you could just have it disappear, kind of like you do with a bracelet, would you do that?
Well, on one side of that question, absolutely. I had a great life prior to this. I had all the things that represent the American dream. But since then, since all that was taken away, what I was left with was the ability to see beyond what life I had before. And now I know that there is so much more to this life. There is so much, shall we say, miracles everywhere. And I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about the magic of life, of nature.
Itself, yes. Well, the question was, would you undo this? Would you undo it?
No. Not by what I now know.
Because I remember when I first interviewed you, I think you would have undone it, but quick.
Well, that's what I said. Originally, when it had torn my life apart, I was left with nothing. But in the last 10, 12 years since I stopped publicly speaking, since I decided to basically court the science side of life one more time. I have been sought out by science groups and universities all around the world. I have spoken to heads of state and heads of countries about this. I was invited by the Vatican 1 month ago to speak with the new Pope.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Are you going to do it?
I've done it.
You did it?
I did it. Who told me, who told me, Jonathan, you are a messenger for all of us.
You spoke to the Pope.
I stayed in the Vatican for 4 days.
Holy smokes. No pun intended.
You were invited?
You were invited to the Vatican? Okay.
I was invited for two reasons. One, I had met the past Pope when I was in the hospital in Mexico some years back, and he happened to be in Mexico. And he was visiting the hospital, and I had an opportunity to talk to him because I was sick in the hospital also. I had actually died for 19 minutes. And
you actually arrested? Physical signs all gone? Wow.
Yes.
And that's another subject I'm really interested in pursuing.
And he came to talk with many people, not just me, but he said that this is a good thing. He actually asked me, Pope Benedict asked me, how can we help them? How can we help the aliens?
Okay. Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello. Hello,
welcome
hello.
Home.
Yes.
Welcome home.
I'd like to ask
Dr. Reed, was the alien wearing clothes, and did you feel them? Was he wearing shoes? How many fingers did he have?
Yes, he had a black suit on, similar to what I would reference like spandex, that was a one piece of material, no seams, no zippers, almost like a turtleneck type thing that covered his hands, his feet, his body, his legs, his torso, everything. What was unique about the suit is when he was unconscious in my garage, I did a topical examination of him, feeling through his suit, feeling my way to find out his fingers, that he had basically three fingers in like a glove or a mitten form, but inside there were five fingers.
Wow.
He had basically the same anatomy that a human would have, except some small additions. But then one thing was very interesting is I took an X-Acto knife and I attempted to cut the suit. And as I cut a 2-inch strip in it, it sealed itself up.
Oh.
And then I cut it again, and it sealed itself up again. And the third time, it wouldn't let me cut it at all.
Really?
And what's interesting about that, Art, is
that's almost a learned behavior, right?
5 years later, NASA came out with a press release that said 5 years later that they had invented a material that was a healing fabric.
Wow.
All that was written in the book in 2000. So
do you think that NASA got hold of that technology?
Yes, I do.
And that's where it came from?
Well, I think it came from a lot of involvement with extraterrestrial life, intelligent off-Earth life. We're surrounded by this. This is not one species only. There's supposedly 50-plus. You know, there's billions of stars, billions of galaxies.
Yes.
And these people travel with dimensional shifting. They don't use our conventional ways of travel. They use light to travel.
Well, everything you've described, Doctor, about the vibrational shifting, both of the alien creature in the woods, of you with the bracelet on, all of that smacks of vibration, of course, smacks of frequency, and frequency seems to be at issue here
Let me say something about that, Art, and it's good that you bring that up. All of the religions of the world talk about harmony in their basic rule. Their basic rule. I'm not talking about their protracted politics. I'm talking about their basic rule. And harmony in science, harmony translates to frequency. Mm-hmm. And frequency translates to energy in science. All of them talk about finding the harmony within your family, within yourself, and extending that harmony, extending that frequency to bring us back into balance. You talked last night. Go ahead.
It's gonna make sense to a lot of people.
Last night you talked with Dr. Greer about the fact that our world is out of balance. Well, that's what they're telling me. Every time I've gone away, every time I've been able to speak with these elders, these incredibly warm, loving, gifted angels, they talk about finding the balance in our life. That it's so simple. We've made it difficult. We're the ones who have put on blinders and refuse to bring it back home. You want to find love in your life, Art? Look in your daughter's eyes.
Oh, I know.
If we did more of that, think how much better the world would be.
Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed.
Art?
Yes.
Art. Boswell's to you.
Thank you.
And as a ham, I was wondering, I know you go on, I guess, what's the 80-meter band? Or
I do, yes.
160-meter band.
Actually, I'm on all of them.
Are you planning on doing any sort of after-show net?
I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about this one of these days, but now is not the time.
All right. Well, I have a question for Dr. Reed then.
Go ahead.
Dr. Reed, it sounds like Freddie has gone from being the frozen ET burrito in the freezer to walking around in your garage. I was wondering, does he consume any sustenance or leave any refuse? Does he eat anything?
All right, that's a good question. All right, does he take in any?
I try to feed him all kinds of things, including dog food, tuna fish, steak, grass, vegetables. The only thing he ever took that I ever saw him consume was water.
Water.
And as far as leaving anything behind, never. Not a thing.
Okay. He's obviously referring to the biological process.
Right.
Dark Matter, and you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello.
Hi, Art. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Yes, Art. This is Dane from Pittsburgh. Look, I'm 24 years old, so I was alive, but I wasn't, old enough to hear you back in your prime, and it's great to hear you back on the radio.
Thank you.
So you have a lot of younger fans out there. My question for Dr. Reed is this. What, if anything, I think the previous caller was asking, did the alien eat anything or did he steal anything from you? Did he take anything from you? I mean, he was in your freezer, so did you have any pizza rolls missing or anything missing? If you could answer that, I'd be appreciative.
Yeah, nothing was missing.
Yeah, especially pizza rolls.
But and he only drank water, only water.
Okay, that was answered previously, and that caller knew it. The pizza rolls was a crack.
That's okay.
Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Hello?
With Dr. Reed. Yes, hi.
Yes, I was wondering, when the alien was peering into Reed's mind, did he notice if it had any brain damage from the injury? Also, the entire time it was out of the freezer, did he ever notice it having any scarring or if the injury had healed, if it regenerated at all?
He has a scar on his head to this day, just as if we would have a scar on my body or your body. It remains. He is biological. He has biology just like we do, and the scar remains. In regard to him moving and being in my presence in the garage during the first 9 days, he moved in and out of the freezer like a fluidity that I had never seen, like a gymnast that was so graceful and so slow, but so powerful. It was just beautiful to watch.
So there was some lucky accident, or maybe it wasn't an accident, that he ended up in the freezer, because either that was his environment or it was a healing environment for him.
Well, that's all I can assume. He never told me that I need to be in the cold. He never has ever indicated anything about it. He was free to come and go. I was so afraid of him during those first days that I would have been happy if he would have left on his own.
Oh, I'm sure. All right. Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hi.
Art Bell.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I have a question for first Roswell, and I have a question for Dr. Reed. I once saw a UFO, and I had this telepathic communication that was 2 or 3 seconds long, and it was large amounts of information that I won't go into. Was it like that, communicating with your alien?
Exactly. In fact, when he would do it, it was like a fire hose being squirted into my brain. I had to ask him verbally to slow down, because I would get these intense migraine headaches the second I was in his presence. So he learned to slow down for me.
Rein it in for you. Wow, that is fascinating, because that just sort of validates my own experience.
All right. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, kind of like a massive download, boom, like that.
Absolutely. And there are, again, I'm going to say, this is not just about me. There are thousands of people all over the world who I've spoken to, you know, who have had very similar experiences.
I know, but you're the one who's left with so much physical evidence. So many of the cases are circumstantial, is the word I guess I would use. They just don't come with the kind of incredible amounts of evidence that you've got, Doctor. Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed. Hello.
Hi, Art. Roswell's to you. Doctor, my mental buffers are backing up with questions about the bracelet, so I'll go quickly and be brief. I was surprised in the interview you just mentioned you had some health problems since all this started happening. I almost expected you to say when you put the bracelet on that it had healing properties for you. My question, plural, is, number one, is there any ongoing testing or research with regard to this bracelet and its properties? And the second question is, has anybody else ever put it on? I would have brought it and asked the Pope to put it on.
Well, first of all, yes, somebody else has tried to put it on. In fact, the initial person who put it on after I did was Robert, and he was immediately sick for about a week. I mean, really, really sick, like I was in the woods. Now, he didn't go anywhere, but he put it on when I happened to be going to the bathroom in the other room just to try it, and it didn't work. Now, two other scientists, have attempted to try it, and both of them are dead. One died immediately, and the other one died a week later. It is being tested, and it is being used for the communication that we are setting up. Something you need to know, Art, and I need to say this.
Sure.
This is not just about ETs. This is not just about visitors from other planets. This is about life and how we all need to evolve and need to extend ourselves to other life. That's what they're telling me. That's what they're telling many other people. In the visits that I've done to use this artifact, it's like being in the presence of God. But I try to take that out of it. I try to see it for the science and the information that I can get out of it.
But I understand why you would feel that, though. I do understand.
We are being shown and given direction that probably has been given to us for centuries by a teacher here and there all over time. I am not special. I didn't want this to happen. I could have much preferred to give this to you, Art, than for me to do this. but for some reason I have this responsibility. And I've decided, since so much of it now has encompassed my life and changed my life for the better, I have decided I will take the responsibility to tell people simply what I know. Nothing more, nothing less.
All right, Doctor. We've got one more break and one more round of questions, and that's it. Dr. Jonathan Reed is my guest. This is Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio.
To call Art Bell, please manipulate your communication device and call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Maybe after you've had an experience like Dr. Reed's, you don't fear the Reaper anymore. Good evening, everybody. I am Art Bell, and Dr. Reed is still here. We'll take some more questions with what time we have left. Hello, you're on the air. Dark Matter is listening. Hi.
Art Bell.
Yes, sir.
Roswell's.
Roswell's, thank you.
I had recently seen an interview with a doctor. Excuse me, he was a professor of neurology, not a particularly religious man, self-described. And his explanation of when... he had a form of meningitis, and he thought that he had passed through was strikingly similar to the doctor's explanation of talking to the golden being.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's a similarity between the two.
Very much so. I believe this is happening to many people all around the world. You know, this life is a precious thing, and I think there's a lot more to it than what we can perceive, what we can actually comprehend. This is something that I think we need to unlearn about our modern times. I think we need to take the blinders off that are politically motivated, that are economically motivated, and get back to the basics of what this life is supposed to be. It's supposed to be lived. It's supposed to be experienced and cherished. Yes.
I had had a massive heart attack at one time, and I remember fading away, and people speak of the walking toward the light.
Yes.
And I was afraid to walk toward the light. But I felt compelled to do so.
Let me tell you something. I know that our lives continue. I know that we are immortal, our soul, our energy that lives within inside of us. I've seen it. I've seen where it goes. I have seen the process in front of my very eyes.
I really hope you're right about that.
It's unquestionable to me. I have seen it, Art.
I wish I had seen it, and I wish I could say it's unquestionable to me. I can't say that. That's awful, huh? I can't say that. I question everything. Hi, Dark Matter, you're on the air with Dr. Reed.
Hello, Art, and hello, Dr. Reed.
Hello.
My default position, having grown up around the nation's capital, is to be skeptical. But about 22 years ago, I had an experience. It was not UFO-related. It was metaphysical, but it knocked my socks off. And one night I'll call and tell you about it, Art.
Okay.
But here's my question for you. I missed the first part of the interview, and I kind of pieced together that you were a doctor having to do with psychology, and I think this happened in the state of Washington in the 90s.
Correct.
And I also get the sense that you were affiliated with some sort of university in the state of Washington. Let me add
For you, sir, that if you miss the first part of it, immediately after the show, it begins repeating. So.
Oh, yes, I know. I'm going to catch it. But my question is, and you might have answered it before, but did you lose your job over this? I mean, what were, outside of the shock of it happening, what were the ramifications?
Well, the ramifications was that I lost everything. Everything was eliminated from my life by a government-type faction, by a group that systematically eliminated my bank accounts, all of my accreditation, my job, everywhere that I went, including my passport and my birth certificate, didn't exist. The only way that I got a passport back was I had a law firm threaten to sue the U.S. government that we were going to plant a story in every major newspaper in the United States that the U.S. government had refused to give me my passport back because I had had an extraterrestrial experience. I got my passport back 4 days later.
Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Art.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. I got a quick question for the doctor. I'm just curious. I know for every force, there's an opposing force, and the people who tried to destroy his life, are they still after him? And why do you think that they would be opposed to the goodness that's coming from this?
All good questions, yeah.
Believe it or not, the major conspiracy to silence me and anybody around me comes from the United States of America. And I think that's interesting in itself. Most other countries have either submitted the fact that extraterrestrial life does exist and they have files that prove it. They don't seem to bother me. They seem to leave me alone. I live in Vancouver, Canada, and I for the most part I don't do much in the United States. As of 2004, I quit speaking in the United States because too many people were dead. And I decided I would go a different direction. And it's not that I'm not speaking. It's that I'm speaking to a different type of group who's willing to listen. And I've ever asked was just for people to listen.
Right. The wormhole is asking what happened to Gary. Is Gary alive or dead?
Well, after we went on your show, Art, I had not had any contact with him for years. Nobody thought he was alive, and some relatives of his called me, verified, in fact, who I was, and I went to see him. Gary had been beaten and left for dead on the side of a road with severe brain injuries and literally was on his last moments. And I used the link artifact and took him with me to that round room and saw his life change before my eyes. I saw him, his spirit, his energy, his life force, whatever you want to call it. I saw it given back to him and him put in to the collective. And those are my words.
Everybody who's even had a brush with you and this whole thing has been affected dramatically, haven't they?
Yes. And we're still standing, Art. That's the amazing thing. We don't do any advertising. We don't do any, you know, like Dan said, we've probably given away as many books as we've sold. But that by the grace of God, by the grace of other people who have helped this to continue, I will keep speaking to those who want to listen because I know something.
I know that our life, our civilization, our humanity needs to evolve because we're in trouble. We're in really big trouble right now.
I agree with that.
And some of the answers are so simple. And I believe we can find them together. I believe that when we reach out across the airwaves, across the table, and touch the person across from us, we are giving them part of ourselves. We are giving them part of our energy, part of our life. That's what we need to do. We need to bring it back to that kind of simplicity where our lives are shared together to enhance each other, where our energy helps each other grow and evolve.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. Whatever, with the rest of this story, what you just said is absolutely true. We're in deep trouble, and we need a new direction. That probably is obvious to everybody.
Well, and I've taken the responsibility of the gift that I was given, and I now take it very seriously, and I know that others need to listen. Others need, mm-hmm. not just to me, but to the idea that life can be so much better if we just work together.
Dr. Reed, we're leaving all the lines full, zillions of them blinking. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the message. Thank you for taking the calls. And most of all, thank you for relating the story in such great detail once again.
Art Bell, I want to say, Roswell, I want to say God bless to you, your current family, your past family, and find that harmony.
Good night, my friend.
Good night. Thank you.
Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert. Running out of time. Midnight in the desert.